Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
Well, my target audience is going to be 50 plus. I am a woman of 50 plus, and I want to be able to have a platform for women 50 plus to be able to feel that they can recreate themselves. It's like almost a rediscovery. And a lot of times, too often, I hear women 50 plus say, I just want to retire, I'm tired, it's over for me. And I want to change that type of mindset to, and not really change the mindset, but just add to that by letting them know there's so many things they still can do at 50 plus. And all it takes is just having a platform of women coming together and sharing different perspectives. And I think that that is going to open the door for women 50 plus to know that there's so much more to them.
Well, y'all know what time it is. Look at here. It's the Hair Morning Radio Hair Show with Carrie Hines. It's your boy, Smooth Black. I just want to say, thank God for this company, y'all. Y'all better be blessed. The Hair Radio Nation going to the next level, y'all. Get it, 2021. God bless.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
Hair radio.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Carrie Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank our Carapi Hair Products, Hair Nation Expo Events, Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first time tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or shout-out during the show. We're here each weekday from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
Ain't nobody worried. Ain't no smiling faces.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders, and that weight is directly balanced between your 2 feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women, and Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and I have a very special guest with us today. His name is Dr. Joel Freeman. Now, he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute. Dr. Freeman, I'd like to welcome you to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you, Carrie.
Absolutely. Now, first of all, we've got to start at the beginning. Tell everyone what the Freeman Institute is.
It's a company I started back about 21, 22 years ago, and we have 8 arenas of expertise, and that ranges from workshops and retreats and keynote addresses to a culture change, reality-based organizational change, and then I do executive success coaching. I do Black History and Diversity Day presentations, and I have a whole aspect that deals with entrepreneurship and business intelligence and creativity, and then do open registration seminar events for communities, and then also develop the Rosetta Stone Replica Project. The Rosetta Stone is not the language software company. It's the actual artifact that was used to crack the code to hieroglyphics back in the early 1800s, and the original is in the British Museum. It was made in Egypt on the west bank of the Nile. They found it in 1799. French soldiers did. But anyway, I have the world's first and only full-size three-dimensional replica that's available for the general public. And also have my own publishing company and other projects we work with. So that kind of gives you pretty much a quick overview of the Institute.
Sure. And tell the folks out there, where is the Institute located? And we'll take it from there in terms of what it's all about.
Sure. It's in Maryland, not far from Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay. And so I want to just let everybody know, as you were kind enough to just kind of give us a quick overview of the Freeman Institute. But when I looked at your website at freemaninstitute.com, I saw quite a bit of information, so many different things that really kind of piqued my interest, and I was just blown away, to be quite frank with you, Dr. Freeman. One of the things that we'll get into, there's so many different aspects, like I said, that we're going to get into, but one of my favorite parts that I uncovered on your site, of course, like some of the, you know, on a lighter side, some of the quotes that you have there are just fantastic. And so, you know, I just wanted to let you know that I'm someone who gravitates towards quotes and things of that nature. So when I saw it, and I look at your kind of your long list of items that you have on your site, and I see that you cover kind of everything, you really do. And you outline it there, you put it there. It's a lot of work that has gone into this. You have some wonderful things that you're doing, obviously, in the way of education. And you have, you know, just some great things historical content, reference. And then my other part, of this that I absolutely love is that you have a huge collection, so of artifacts and things that you know, that document the African American experience, or the African experience, I guess, it if you were on some level. So, you know, we want you to walk us through just about everything. So, and then I'm going to end with the entrepreneurship, because that's another part of this that fits into a great deal of where we are today at the Hair Radio Morning Show and what we talk about quite often. So I've got a whole
thing on that to kind of cover with you. So let's talk about this particular, before we even get into Annie Malone, which we will definitely get into, let's talk about the, I think I saw something that you had written, a documentary, if you will, on a white man's journey into, or through black America, I think it was. Why don't you tell the folks about this and how all this came to be, why this came to be, and how you got involved? Because I understand that you're from Canada, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, what
so
happened is I ended up leaving home when I was 17. I come from a little town of Three Hills, Alberta, Canada, and I left home at 17, just started hitchhiking all around North America, long-haired
wow.
hippie, dope-smoking fool, and just traveled probably 5,000-6,000 miles on my thumb. Pretty much
wow.
all around North America. And then I had an experience that actually changed my life, that really caused me to revisit, you know, what my purpose was and what my goals were. I signed up for Bible school the next day. And
how
I became,
old were you, if I may ask, at that point?
I was,
if you don't mind.
I was actually about 17.
Really?
I was 19 years of age. I'm sorry, 19 at that
wow.
point.
Wow. Okay.
And then I ended up going to school. I became a pastor. I became chaplain for the Bullets, the Wizards, and the NBA.
Wow.
One of the first chaplains in the history of the NBA. And I started that in 1978-79 season. And
so
then,
what are the chaplain, for those of us who don't know? Obviously, we know what a chaplain does in general, but what did a chaplain for the NBA do exactly? Like, how does all that work?
Well, I'm actually writing a book about it right now called Finding the Open Man, subtitled The Surprising Benefits of Unselfishness. And basically, the whole idea behind being a chaplain is to be a confidant, a friend, someone without any hidden agenda, someone who keeps everything in absolute confidence and is just there for the guys, is not there to take but to give. And it's such a rare situation for so many NBA players, because most people have a hidden and sometimes not so hidden agenda. And so sometimes they don't even know for a year to 2 years what their real agenda is for some people that want to get close to them, either through their kids,
wow.
their wife or family, parents. They try to get through to the player. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it. And so I just knew I could love these guys unconditionally, and I could be a listening ear. I didn't always have the right thing to say, perhaps, but I could at least listen. And I think that over 20 seasons, I mean, there are 6 coaching changes, and generally speaking, a new coach brings in his or her new people, you know, depending on the WNBA or NBA or whatever. They just clear the deck and start with their own people. And to have survived 6 coaching changes, I still shake my head. It's remarkable to me that even happened. But it was a great ride. Got to know a lot of players and their families, and that, in a nutshell, is what it's all about.
So you probably well, I also understand that you used to get a lot of questions from these guys, and that's kind of what also helped to prompt you and kind of push you forward with getting to have a deeper understanding. So, what kind of questions did they pepper you with?
Well, what happened is of course, you can imagine, when I was 25 years of age when this happened, and my first season, and I've always looked rather young, and you can imagine I probably looked about 16 or 17 years of age when I was 25. And so they're looking at each other and saying, "You mean we're supposed to spill our guts to that guy? You got to be kidding me." And so it was earning their respect. But I think that they were testing the seams of my soul and trying to, and the sincerity of my heart, by asking questions. It's probably unconscious. I don't think it was a conscious grilling or anything like that. But over time, they began to ask questions like, you know, what did Jesus look like? What part did people of African descent have to play in biblical and extra-biblical history? Just questions like that that I found that I did not have the responses to. Heck, I didn't even know what questions to ask. And so what happened is that little by little, it forced me to start researching so that I could have some type of a credible response to them. Then you fast forward. That was my first inkling, real inkling, that I needed to grow and expand. I never was interested in history in school, but that got me started. Then you fast forward to about 1995. I met a gentleman by the name of Don Griffin. He was the senior HR manager for a company, and by that time in 93, I had stopped pastoring and decided to take my pastor's heart into the business world. So I launched my own company called the Freeman Institute. And at that point, I was at his job, you know, working, doing some events for his senior leadership team. And between sessions, Don began to share with me his journey as an African-American male, growing up, and some of the latest revelations and understandings he had about himself, about history, and it fascinated me. So I began to study some of the things that he was saying, began to research. I had that much respect for him. And I remember going to the library time and time again. There's no internet at the time, and I just would get these, what we used to call VHSs or videos.
Right, remember those.
And so I'd bring home a video, let's say a series called Africa, A Voyage of Discovery by Basil Davidson. Is a BBC series, a man from Great Britain. And then I'd pick up the Eyes on the Prize, part one, part two. The Promised Land, about the move from the South to especially the Chicagoland area. And I just began to read books, and then I bumped into Ivan Van Sertima. And I remember calling him up. Someone gave me his home phone number. I called him up, and I said, you don't know me, and I barely know you, but I would like to get to know you. And what happened is that he began to share things with me, and then he got my address. The next thing I knew, 3 weeks later, I got a big, huge box of his books that he edited and wrote. And then I called him back and asked him if he would become my historical guide, my main historical guide. And we spent hours on the phone together where I'd read a book, and I'd redline it, I'd ask all kinds of questions, and he let me ask any off-the-wall question that was ricocheting around my little pea brain. It was just a fascinating experience.
Wow.
We had a great time talking. He's passed away now since 2009, and I miss him, you know, on many levels, but especially just hanging out with him on the phone, just talking with him about various things, bouncing ideas around. So
wow.
That kind of was the genesis to, and then I met a gentleman by the name of Mark Mitchell, who has a huge Black History collection. And Mark and I began to talk, and I just saw the power of his collection, the impact it had. It is a transcendent quality, transcending race and gender and generation and religion, class. I mean, just fascinating. And so I began to, he became a mentor of mine, and I began to develop my own collection, which is now well over 3,000 pieces. The oldest piece dates back to 1553. I've been able to do exhibits at the United Nations twice, and plus they've used some of my pieces and information on international exhibit that's going around the world right now. Clinton Presidential Library have done things in conjunction with the White House communication staff, also Secret Service 4 years in a row, FBI, just fascinating stuff that
Wow.
has emerged as a result of this collection. It's opened up doors. And I find that especially when I'm speaking about diversity or Black history, it opens up the minds and hearts to receive what I have to share, because when people see 20, 30, 40 pieces of my collection and exhibit before I speak, you know, now they're intrigued. What's this? What's this white guy all about? What's his deal? You know, what's motivating him? And that's the cartoon bubble above everybody's head. And so I'm able to respond best I can to that. In fact, I have a website called whitemansstory.com. That white man's, no apostrophe on the S, man's, but whitemansstory.com. And that's my online response to that question that people have about, you know, what motivated me to get involved.
Well, I also want to talk a little bit more about this amazing collection that everybody is talking about, of course, that you indicated, over 3,000 pieces. I think I saw in your video or somewhere where it even had, like, the shackles, if you will, for, like, that some of the slaves may have, you know, worn or what have you. In addition to so many other different things, what are some of the other standout items that are included in the collection? And I understand that it is online to some degree.
Yes, blackhistorycollection.com gives kind of a brief overview of some of the pieces, but it's blackhistorycollection.com, singular. And, you know, that one pair of shackles that I received, I was over in Ghana at the Slave Coast Castle, and I was talking with a gentleman there. His name was Stephen Donica, and I began to share with him a little bit about, you know, the film that I had co-created with Don Griffin and the book and some other things in my collection. And then I said, how would it be possible for me to get a pair of shackles, a set of shackles from here, from Africa? And he says, I don't know, but I'll find out. He brought everything before the village elders there, and they voted unanimously to donate a set to me, which he sent to me. And I just blown away that they were that kind, and because I'm sure it's not an unlimited number of shackles they have available, and for them to do that, I just feel so respected by these the individuals who voted on this, and of course also Stephen Danica. And so the other pieces, I've tried to do, Gary, is to develop kind of a more of a global picture, because I find that here in America and in some parts of Canada also, there's this intractable black-white situation where it's very hard to understand, to cross that no man's land, or so to speak, between the two races. And so I've tried to bring more of an international view, and because I really think that once people begin to realize that there were things going on in South America. In fact, there's well over 3 million that right now that speak Spanish and Portuguese, people of African descent in South Africa, and many people can't imagine that and cannot understand it. But it just is. I have documents going back to 1553 from Peru, from Ecuador, from Argentina. Some of them are written in Old Spanish, so that even if someone knows Spanish today, they cannot even read these other documents. You have to have a specialized understanding about the Old Spanish script. And these are all slave documents. I've got an 11-page document from a hospital where slaves were, if they got sick, that's where they went, St. Bartholomew, just outside of Lima, Peru. And it's just an astonishing thing. And then also I have... What I've tried to do with the collection is I tried not to spend so much time documenting the horrific nature of the slave trade and all the rest of it, even though that's a part of the picture and is a necessary part of the picture. What I've tried to do is to showcase the inventiveness of it and the creativity of people who have been under the boot of slavery and the trade. And you know,
and what have you found,
Jim Crow
for the most
laws.
Part? Right.
Well, what I've discovered is I developed a metaphor that is not new, but I've applied it to this situation. It's called Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. I commissioned a 90-second animated video that people can see on YouTube, Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. And it what it basically is the concrete is a metaphor for all the horrific things that have happened, ranging from lynching, the black code laws, and just the depression where blacks were hired last and fired first, and just so many issues that are, it's impossible to exaggerate the horrific nature what people endured. But then we talk about the blades of grass who came up through, cracked through, and sometimes exploded through the concrete. So the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. So by using this metaphor, it gives permission to talk about the horrific nature without it being a downer. Because then, as I mentioned, the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. Once we begin to understand how terrible it was, and then we see the accomplishments of individuals in spite of how terrible it was, my goodness, I say, I think I've got problems. You know, I mean, here's an example of somebody who had everything stacked against them, and they still made something of their lives and an inspiration to their families. I mean, we all have concrete internally. Stuff like, you know, hey, I'm dumb, I'm stupid, I can't make it, I'm a fraud. If people really knew what I was all about. That's the stuff that echoes in the minds and the hearts of just about every human being. And at one point or another, that can actually rob them of their purpose and their potential.
Right.
And so that we all have that internal concrete. I'm too short, I'm too fat, I'm too skinny, I'm too tall, I'm too this, I'm too that. My ears are too big, my ears are too small, my hair is not enough. You know, all that kind of stuff that gurgles around. But then you add to it the systemic issues in a culture that provide external concrete that actually can become so terrible and so demanding of a person's attention that it can actually cripple them and come rolling over them and just say, well, I guess I'm nothing. I might as well commit suicide. I might as well do something harmful to myself so that I sabotage my own success. But here are people that came up through it in spite of it. And that, to me, is I just shake my head. And every time I see pieces from Annie Malone and Madam C.J. Walker and Frederick Douglass and Toussaint Louverture and other individuals, Marcus Garvey, I mean, the list goes on and on and on of individuals, Pearl Bailey. It just is astonishing to me what these individuals accomplished. And so what I've tried to do is develop a touchstone, if you will. For instance, like Pearl Bailey, I have the actual check that she was paid for her part in Porgy and Bess. And someone, I'm not going to tell you how much it was, because someone might say, how much was that? I'm going to say you have to go to blackhistorycollection.com and do a search for Pearl Bailey, and you'll find out how much she was paid for her part in the movie that came out in the early 50s. And so it just is amazing when you think of what people like her accomplished. I have Ethel Waters, her contract, her book, His Eyes on the Sparrow. It was a smash bestseller. And I have the actual contract signed by her and her co-author, the one who the ghostwriter, not the ghostwriter, because he was declared that he wrote the book, but co-author with her, Charles Samuels. And then I have other items in here.
Well, Dr. Freeman, was it hard to kind of gather these items? How do you find these items? I mean, is it easier nowadays because of the internet? I guess I should ask.
It's actually very difficult. If someone were to embark upon a collection like this
if I were to start a collection today, I don't think I would be able to do it.
Be virtually impossible, and I'm not kidding. It is. I know what's out there and what's not out there, and it is the stuff that you get now, just reproductions, and there's a lot of fakes, and it's very hard. For instance, I have an original letter, handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. It's almost priceless because where could you find one? You know, someone might say, well, I've got everything. No, you don't. You don't have a handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. You know?
That's huge.
Someone like an Oprah or, you name the names out there of individuals that would be interested. I mean, it just, if they went out to look for it, they couldn't find some items that I've been able to bring together.
Wow. Wow. Well, I have to say, let me just remind everybody and kind of bring everybody up to where we are. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, today's guest is Dr. Joel Freeman, and he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute in Maryland. And we've been kind of following along and just thoroughly impressed with the amount of information that you have. You are truly a historian in every sense of the word, and an entrepreneur, and you just cover everything, really. I don't think I've seen anybody in a long time like this who I just, we're all blown away with this kind of information, this knowledge, and the willingness that you share, putting it out there, and it's quite remarkable. So I'm going to kind of turn to, I do want to talk a little bit about Annie Malone and some of the other folks that you write about. And I know we kind of glossed over the book a bit that you wrote with the gentleman, Don Griffin, I believe.
Don Griffin, yes.
So I want you to talk about the book specifically. Tell the folks a little bit more. Are we able to get a copy of this book?
Yes, it can be gotten online on Amazon or anywhere else. And or they can contact me after the program or something like that, and I'd be happy to sign a copy for them and send it to them.
Sure.
Right. But
it's called The Return to Glory. I just want to make sure that that's clear, Return to Glory.
Subtitled The Powerful Stirring of the Black Man. And the first half is all about the historical content, and that's the half that Don wrote. The second half has to do with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap to wholeness. And in that last part, I detail how a person can walk through the grieving process. Because I remember when I was interviewing people for the book,
uh-huh.
especially because the book is targeting especially young men, ages about 12 to about 27. And while we were researching this, we had people tell us, "You're crazy. You know, why would you want to write a book? Because if you want to hide something from young African American men, you just put it in a book, right?" That's what they're telling us. And they said, "You're wasting your time. You got to use more visual, music, whatever other means and methodologies to reach your target audience." But we kept on going with it, and. I'll tell you,
which is a horrible stereotype all in it, you know, unto itself.
It is. Absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was the messaging message we were getting from people we were interviewing for the book.
Right.
So anyway, what happened is the second half deals with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap. And so what I did is, you can imagine on a suspicion scale from somewhat to extremely suspicious, we're banging on the extremely suspicious end of the scale when I'm interviewing someone, let's say, for the book. And they're saying, you know, why are you writing this book and who are you and what are you all about? And so what I did is I asked a question that changed the tone of every single interview. And brought some of us from 45 minutes to sometimes 4, 6, maybe even 8 hours. Some dear friendships emerging. And here's the question that changed the tone of every single interview. Do you remember the moment when you realized that because of the color of your skin, that the rules were somehow different for you? Now, by asking that question, to have a 65-year-old man pause, look out the window, and then look back at me, and then tell me with brilliant clarity what happened when he was 5 or 6 years of age. Knowing remembering the weather, what he was wearing, his mother's response when he told her about it, and just, my goodness, that question changed the tone. Because I began to then see that there was a whole grieving process. After that moment, whether it's 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 19 or 20 years of age, depending on the situation, to then go from that moment to what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote when she was still alive. She wrote a book about the grieving process. And grieving We've all lost loved ones or lost a dream, but grieving is all about loss. And so the loss that I began to identify, because my PhD work is in psychology, and I think in that direction, began to see that the loss had to do with, it was the loss of innocence, that all of a sudden a young kid, a young boy, young girl, a young individual, suddenly has, it's like the scales have been taken off. It's like the blinders have been taken off, and they now can see, wow, they hate me just because of the color of my skin? You got to be kidding me. And then the grieving process, ranging from denial to depression to just all the different aspects that go with the whole grieving process. And in the book, I spend a chapter on each layer, each aspect of the grieving process. And of course, it isn't a neat, nice and tidy, while I'm moving from one part to the next, never to be revisited, but a person could be in whatever acceptance means, you know, because who knows what that means. A person could be in acceptance at 4:30 in the afternoon and be back at square one at 7 o'clock that night and working through the whole process again. So that began to really unlock to me the doorway, the gateway to understanding what humans go through in a situation like this. And it just had an astonishing impact on me.
Well, you know something, Dr. Freeman, I have to ask you, and I think this is about as good a time as any. When you see all of the things that are happening in the country in these current times, and you being a person of faith and education and all the above, and what can you say, and how do you explain it? What are your thoughts on it? I'm just curious.
Well, I think that humans are humans wherever we go. In other words, if you're a Korean in Japan, you're going to be experiencing some crazy situations. If you are a let's say a gypsy in Hungary or in Sweden, you're going to be experiencing situations that are very, very difficult. And if you're from one tribal system or another tribal system, warring against another tribal system in Africa, very similar dynamics. Same color of skin in all in these accounts, except Korean and Japanese might have just a variation of the color of skin. But and also in Mexico, if you're darker skin or lighter skin color, the darker skinned individuals deal with incredible discrimination. In Italy, if you're from North Italy versus South Italy. In Great Britain, just the sound of your speech. If you're from Yorkshire or Scotland and you're talking with someone who's from London, you know, from a certain part of London, there's immediate, the moment the person opens their mouth, there's an immediate class system that emerges. My point being is that for me, I think that wherever we go, there's going to be this kind of situation. And I think it's important for us to understand the history so that we never repeat it personally. Let me tell you a quick story. I was down at Los Alamos National Laboratory some years back, about 7, 8, maybe 10 years ago now, and I was speaking at their Martin Luther King event, and I talked about the moment, and I talked about the grieving process, and there was a gentleman there who was very high up at Los Alamos National Laboratory at the time, a man of African descent. He came up to me afterwards and began to share with me his story a little bit. And then after he shared with me a story, he said, you know, he says, when I experienced the moment when I realized because of the color of my skin that the rules were somehow different for me, he said, it was like a hurricane force wind came against me. And he was no more than about 6, 7 years of age. And he said, in fact, by the way, when you think about a hurricane, it takes about, 75 miles per hour for a wind to get a name. And he said that what happened is that when that, he said, I learned as a young man how to lean into the wind. I learned how to have a sense of humor in the midst of the wind. I learned, it was a dark sense of humor, but I had a sense of humor.
Right.
I learned how to be successful in spite of the wind. I learned how to have relationships with people in spite of the wind, but I knew the wind was there. And he says later on, he says, I rose very pretty high in the ranks. I got a job in Japan. He said, I went to Japan and got a tour there. And he said, the moment I got off the airplane, he says, wouldn't you know it, the wind stopped. And remember what I said about the Korean and Japanese. If you're Korean, the wind is at about 120 miles per hour for you. But as an African, a man of African descent, he said the wind has stopped for him. About 3-4 weeks later, there were a delegation from D.C. came to visit. And he said they met at a restaurant. And he said within the first 5 minutes, he said, at the restaurant, he says, I felt the wind pick up again. It was just crazy and strange. Then he looked at me. He's a no BS kind of guy. He looked at me straight in the eye, and as serious as a heart attack, he said, for some reason, I don't feel any wind coming from you. Now, Carrie, I don't know. It just struck me so incredibly hard what he said to me. And I thought, I got in the car. I mean, we're I had to get to Albuquerque to get on the plane to come back to Baltimore. A couple of times I had to pull over because I was crying so much, because it meant so much to me. And I just, at that point, you know, I began to pray, I began to talk to God. I said, I never want to be a person who sponsors the wind for my wife, for my kids, for my next-door neighbors, people at church, people wherever I go, and be in cross-cultural situations. I don't want to be a sponsor of the wind. And not if, but when I do sponsor the wind, I just want to be man enough to go to that person, whoever it might be, and ask for forgiveness and apologize and repair as best as I can. Now, I think that is a metaphor, if you will, for how things can change. It's one by one, people reaching out and in spite of the pain. Henry Nouwen wrote a book called The Wounded Healer, and I think that's what it's all about, that in the midst, in spite of our wounds, in spite of the history, that we all seek to understand before seeking to be understood. That's what Augustine said in the 4th century.
Wow.
Seek to understand before seeking to be understood. Those are words worth embroidering. But
I love
what's cool about that statement is that it doesn't preclude the need to be understood, but it's all about understanding. And I think if every one of us, within the sound of my voice, myself included, if every one of us over the next 30 days said, I am going to seek to understand before seeking to be understood with our spouses, with our kids, with our next-door neighbors, everybody,
mm-hmm.
and just I think it could have a profound impact on the quality of our lives, on our experiences, and the impact on our work experience, everything that we can imagine. So that's what I think it needs to happen. And so every pore in my, every bone, every tissue in my body, every cell in my body, I want to be committed to that. I want to be committed to impacting other people, like the hot coal principle. The old days, we had the hibachi grill, and you put the briquettes in there, and there's only one or two that are hot, and then you kind of bring the other ones that are cold, you bring them up next to the hot ones, and you hope they catch fire. And
yeah.
So I just think if we can get just some people that are hot coal,
uh-huh.
briquette coals, and with this message, and little by little, you know, the whole purpose behind the collection. I hold things lightly. You know, that collection, the whole purpose of the collection is to help create an opening in the hearts for people to hear this message. And my book, the books I write, you know, everything is all designed to help open up doors and hearts, minds to these kinds of things, to get out of small-mindedness, to kind of move. We can't deny the pain, but it's kind of like a ratchet wrench. You know, a lot of people view the click, 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 you know, the backwards movement.
Right, right.
Just as that, a backwards movement. But actually, when you think about the purpose of the ratchet wrench to loosen a bolt or tighten a bolt, when you do the click, 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 that's an important part of the whole purpose of the ratchet wrench. What's my point? The point is I think sometimes we just need to take a step back, take a look at our pain, click, 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 click. And when it's uncomfortable, turn the music off, turn the external stimulation off, and just confront the pain. And we might have to do it in counseling. We might have to do it reading books. We might have to do it in prayer. In a lot of different ways we deal with the pain, but we all have to do that click, 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 and take the step back. But really, that step back is not a backward step. It's a forward step, because now we're ready to confront the issues in our lives, to deal with people out of respect, mutual respect. Not me trying to be black or someone else trying to be white. It's just saying, hey, I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm not going to diss my own people. I'm not going to tear my own race down. I'm just going to be who I am. And I'm going to allow you to be who you are when you come into that 5-foot zone around me. And so that's what it's all about, I think.
Wow. Well, I think you put it eloquently, I have to say. Let's talk about just turning a little bit over towards the entrepreneurial part of things. And I love how you really, I have to say, I read a little bit closely about some of the items in terms of you helping corporations and helping folks in terms of diversity and all kinds of different things and customer service and just teaching and being there to help guide folks. I was just quite impressed with all of that, Dr. Freeman. So I want to kind of just talk for a moment, and maybe we need to start off by recognizing the impact of an Annie Malone, of C.J. Walker, and then kind of talk about entrepreneurship maybe just in general terms. And then I have something I want to mention to you, but why don't we start there? Why is it so important? And it seems like all these things are connected when I think about, the Freeman Institute. It seems like all of these things that you do, there is a theme, there is a purpose for all of these different aspects that you tackle. You do a lot and you say a lot. And there's a reason, I believe. But I'd like for you to talk to that a little bit. You know, about the entrepreneurship and Annie Malone and all of that. Why did you decide to include Annie Malone as part of your wonderful site and information?
Well, Terry, you are right. There's no more than 2 degrees of separation between any two things that I'm involved with. In fact, what I did is I think it's important for everyone to do this. But I figured every major corporation or organization, faith-based, nonprofit, for-profit, whatever, most every successful organization has a vision statement, mission statement, core values, code of conduct.
Right.
And I figure why not everybody else? Why not individuals develop that? And so what I've done is I developed my own vision statement, my own mission statement, my own core values, and I detail that in the workbook called "If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand." It's a book about entrepreneurship, about taking the idea to the marketplace. It's a book about discerning the difference between a viable business dream and a nightmare as quickly as possible. And it's also developed so that an organization could create an entrepreneur club so that people can learn how to deal with objections and learn how to deal with rejection. Because if people can deal with those two things, especially learning it young in life, they can be successful in whatever they do, objections and rejection. And so I think that when it comes to entrepreneurship, see, one of the things that I want to do is help community-based organizations and faith-based organizations establish galleries, Black history galleries in a community. And I think that a gallery can become, in fact, if someone goes to blackhistorygallery.com, blackhistorygallery.com, they can learn more about this model. Because I think a Black history gallery can become like a town well for a community where people can learn about morals and values and just entrepreneurship and so many different aspects of what it means to return to glory. And so then what happens is that as a person learns about entrepreneurship, in fact, I think especially with let's say, an organization wanting to mentor youth. You know, if you come at a young person with the whole idea of morals and values, they're going to be gone in New York second. But if you come at them with the idea of how can we connect now with later, you know, where do you want to be down the road 5-10 years from now? And what are you doing now that will connect with 5-10 years from now? And, you know, if what you're doing now doesn't connect with 5-10 years from now, then we need to revisit what you're doing now. And we can do that in a very positive way and begin to understand that the future is a connection of the eternal now, you know, the moment, these moments that we connect together that become the future. And so I think it's important to bring a group of young people together, let's say, and say let's have an entrepreneur club. And by the way, let's develop an entrepreneurial business together. And I developed a whole magazine project around that that's going crazy around the country right now. And let's develop a project so that you can learn how to deal with objections and rejection. And then you can learn how to shake a hand firmly while you're looking squarely in someone's eyes. You can learn how to dress in a manner that's going to be one less speed bump for someone to go over to get to you as a person. We're going to learn how to just the way we communicate, what we say, how we say it, when we say it, time, tone, tact. We're going to look at all these different aspects. We look at your values, your morals, your character. But you see, all this stuff gets slipped in through the side door. And it's along the way, all this stuff becomes introduced because, you know, if you want to be successful, if you want to make more money, if you want to be a person that has a greater purpose in life and attracts people to you, your counsel is in demand, you have to start looking at these other areas. But if you lead with that foot, the other area foot, it's going to drive them away. But if you lead with the foot, you know, of success and entrepreneurship, because we're all either going to be an employer or an employee. And I prefer to train up employers, people with an entrepreneurial mindset that can end up hiring 100, 1,000, 10,000 people down the road.
Exactly.
And provide jobs for families. And that's the kind of mindset I like to prepare people for. And they're almost not content for anything else but that.
Exactly. Well, I love that. I really do. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Speaking of which, I see that you have the video there. I didn't get a chance to discover that before we began to chat today. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the Madam C.J. Walker items that you have. And I believe they're part of your collection. Or tell us a little bit about that and how did you, you know, we'll turn to the hair part of it.
Okay.
How did you get that and talk a little bit about that? And I'm looking at your video, but I don't have the sound up. So, you know, walk me through a little bit of what all of that is about.
Well, Madam C.J. Walker, most everyone has heard of her. And because when I'm in a crowd, let's say 1,000 people, and I ask, how many hear of Madam C.J. Walker? And hands go up everywhere. She's an incredible person. She fought against lynching. She gave money for fighting against lynching. She went to Washington, D.C. to help create legislation against lynching. She was a woman of great character who helped to develop entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs. And yet the question I generally have in a situation like that is, okay, what well did she draw her water from? What shoulders did she stand on to become who she was? And so I bumped into Annie Malone. And hardly in that same crowd of 1,000 people, you might have 99% of the folks raising their hand about Annie Malone, about Madam C.J. Walker, but then you might have three or four people saying they know who Annie Malone is.
Right.
So I figured I'm going to make it part of my life mission is to help help people know about who Annie Malone is.
Yes.
Because she
Yes. Go ahead. Go right ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. She was.
Oh, no. She was an incredible person. She was actually, she trained up over 75,000 women entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. She trained Madam C.J. Walker in 1905, and Madam C.J. Walker became a Poro agent, because that was the name of her college, Poro College. She built this beautiful building in St. Louis, Missouri, four stories high. It looks, I have an original book that people can get off Amazon if they go to porocollege.com. And Poro College, it's just very simple. The word, first word is four letters. Poro, P as in Paul, O as in ocean, R as in Ralph, O as in ocean, Poro, like P-O-R-O, college.com. And they'll see this building, and then they'll also see a booklet that she published back in 1926. And a part of my Black History collection, yeah, I have an original one of those 1926 booklets. There's very few of them around. And when you open up the booklet, the first thing you start looking at is how incredible this building is. It's like it's straight. If I just showed you a picture of some of the rooms, you would swear it's out of Wall Street in New York. And this particular building was a building where she trained up, as I mentioned, over 75,000 women entrepreneurs who she gave cash awards to for saving accounts or home purchases. She gave a diamond ring to them after 5 years of service. Her philanthropy toward them and toward others was legendary. This building is just an incredible place that she created for this. She owned a whole city block in Chicago. She paid, imagine this, 1926 alone, she paid over $40,000 in taxes. Just think about that.
Amazing.
One of the first people in the entire state of Missouri to own a Rolls Royce. And
who was actually the very first self-made female African-American millionaire? Annie Malone, or was it, I mean, not that it, you know, is something we should, you know, compare on any level, but I'm just curious because I've always grown up thinking it was Madam C.J. Walker with all of her, you know, things and accomplishments.
Yeah, from all the research I've done, if I were a betting man, and I'm not a gambling man, but if I were, I'd bet the farm that Annie Malone was the first millionaires of African descent, women, female millionaires in the country.
And that's what I'm getting.
Timing.
Why? How on this earth? I try to figure this out as well. How did? And I love Madam. I love both and all the things that they
no
stand for.
They both are wonderful. Yes.
Absolutely.
And that's not even part of the discussion here.
Right. Exactly. But how on this earth did Madam C.J. Walker take all the things that she learned, which I'm sure was a wonderful tribute to Annie Malone, and seems that only America, it seems like we only remember or know of the accomplishments of the student as opposed to the teacher.
I think a lot of it had to do with Annie Malone. What happened is that she ended up getting married in, I think it was 1924-ish, right around there. And what happened is that after she got married, her husband, he was not a very good man. And he caused such incredible problems for her that I just shake my head. And felt that he was due so much more than and they ended up getting divorced, let me put it that way.
Wow.
And from that point on, what happened is her business became, she was a very, if you look at her building and everything that she did, it was incredible, impeccable, you know, clean, it was orderly, it was, I mean, you could see the record system she had. My point being is that this was an incredible person. But once after the wedding, then what happened is that he began to sabotage everything. And she never recovered. Then the IRS got involved, and she never recovered from that at all. Here's a college that employed, in 1926, 175 people with franchise outlets and in North America, South America, Africa, the Philippines, a wealthy, wealthy woman. And then at the end of her life, she pretty much dies destitute. And all that's left right now is the orphanage, the Annie Malone orphanage, that was a facility on Good Avenue. I don't know if you remember the song Johnny Be Good by Chuck Berry.
Yes,
he grew up on Good Avenue, right around the corner. And that's where the spelling Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D-E, in the song, it comes from that Good Avenue.
All this time, I thought it was just Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D. So
G-O-O-D-E. If you look it up on the internet, you'll see that's how it's spelled.
Wow.
And he later became a beautician under the Poro system. He graduated in 1952 because he thought the music thing wasn't going to work. And so he became a beautician. And, of course, his songs just took off. And, he never went back to it. But
Right. Amazing. So, okay, well, that explains a great deal for us on that. Because I was just curious. I'm really sad to understand that she had that kind of a ending. But you know what? I always like to remind folks, and it always seems to me that it's always those who are incredibly talented and creative, and they always attract a certain kind of the opposite, if you will. I don't know. It just seems very strange to me. But anyway,
some people make great personal choices and bad business choices, and other people make bad business,
it's the
bad
opposite,
personal choices
exactly.
And good personal choices.
Yeah, that's
amazing.
It's crazy. Exactly. Well, listen, thank you so much. This is great. Folks, if you've just joined us, we have really been kind of getting a great education, a great understanding of so many historical elements and things that we kind of knew a little bit about, or we kind of heard about, and some of us have read some things, but not others. So we're so excited to have the gentleman behind the Freeman Institute. He is the founder, CEO, and president, Dr. Joel Freeman, and he's with us today. And this is just, I'm still kind of stuck on the 3,000, more than 3,000 pieces that you have in the Black History Collection. I can't wait to come and see that. So I'm very, very excited.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited
about it. Sure. So this is just wonderful. And we're going to tell the folks again, why don't you do that, Dr. Freeman? Tell the folks how they can reach you, how they can find out the items that they really need to focus on some of these. I mean, you have quite a bit of information.
Well, I think if people can go to blackhistorycollection.com, and then at the very bottom of the page is all of my contact information. And so then I'd be very happy to talk with them if they want to order a book, a film version of the book, Return to Glory, the entrepreneurship book, anything at all, or just want to talk maybe about something in there that they have a collection or a few pieces and they're wondering about it. I'd be very happy to talk with people. And so that's probably the best way, blackhistorycollection.com.
We're going to, of course, stay on top of all of this and bring you back, Dr. Freeman. We're going to keep, we've got you now. And there is a whole lot of this that we're going to delve into on a regular basis, because this is something that's so critical and important for us to have a greater understanding about. And I feel so honored and lucky right now. I feel so lucky that I've been able to come across your information. I'm just very grateful. Now, I have to say, before we close out, I had mentioned this at the top of the interview. I love the quotes that you've assembled. I don't know who wrote them, but I just love them. And these are just a couple of them that I just said, oh, wow, how great. Patience is not waiting. It's how you act while you're waiting. So that's one. I love that. And I think that says so much. And my other favorite that I seem to have just picked up again from looking at, you know, I started at freemaninstitute.com, and I saw this, and it's like age doesn't always bring wisdom. Sometimes age comes alone. I just love that. That says it all. So I want to just say you are just extraordinary. So
you know what?
You
People
are.
Say I'm,
you're extraordinary.
I'm an expert in this or that. I'm not an expert. I'm just a student. And so I'll always be a student learning.
Wow.
You know, like someone once said that you can't learn with your mouth open. You know, you
right.
just it's just more of a situation. You know, you just really. I'm always someone that I want to just learn. You know, because generally speaking, you aren't learning much when your lips are moving. And so I just want to be a person who listens at least twice as much than I speak.
I
did a lot more speaking today than I.
Well, that's
than I
okay.
like to do.
that's exactly what I was about to say. It's okay when your lips are speaking when they're educating so many people, countless folks who need to hear what you have to say. So I am so grateful. And now, are you on social media? We need to find out. Are you on social media at all?
I'm on Facebook. I've got about 16 pages. In fact, there's a page called Black History Collection. It's the only one on Facebook. Got over 10,000 followers on that. And got some very, very cool stuff on that. And then, of course,
well, you're
my
about
name.
To have 10,001. Okay.
There's Black History Collection right on the Facebook page. And then,
sure.
of course, I have my own personal Facebook page, and I'd love to connect with anybody. And then I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter and who knows about me and all
okay.
that kind of stuff that's out there.
So we can find you. Okay. Well,
yeah.
I'm going to have you back, as I said, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Well, do you have any closing thoughts? You've been so kind to just share your perspective on all of this, and just someone who has done so much. Do you have any closing thoughts or words of inspiration or encouragement?
Well, I do. I think, speaking of the hair and beauty industry, you know, I just see how Asians have pretty much taken over, and I'm not mad at them. I think they just took advantage of a situation that was open and available. I've developed a 10-year plan on how African Americans can take back the hair care and beauty industry, starting from the top down and the bottom up. And I think Annie Malone figures very much into this. I would love to see this booklet get into every beauty parlor, every beauty salon, every barbershop in the country, and have people learn about Annie Malone. And then I'd like to see the most senior people in the hair care beauty industry, from the old guard companies, the new guard companies, come together. In the first year, not even deal with business things, just develop relationship, to take a look at the elephants in the room, to walk through all of that, to deal with that, and then have a united, just not a united front necessarily, even though that's important, but united, just be united and to really become good friends and understand how important this is. And then in the second year, start developing manufacturing and then distribution. And little by little, I think that there's a whole willing audience built around Annie Malone's story that could be wide open, because people will not buy black just for the sake of buying black. They want to buy something that is a good price, that's easily available, it is distributed well, is manufactured well, and you know, you just check all the boxes off, and then someone will say, okay, now I'll buy whatever that product is. If it happens to be black, that's what I'm talking about, is to create a whole industry that can, because without the if the consumers are trained and understand what's going on, I think, and then there's a product and manufacturing and distribution all set up in place to deliver it. I think that within 10 years, the whole industry can turn around and it can become something that's well within the African American community. But I think Annie Malone is the key for all of this.
Well, I just want to remind the folks, and the book that you're talking about, exactly the title and how we can get our hands on
it's
that book
Madam,
again.
Madam Walker's Role Model. It can be found on Amazon, eBay, but if they go to, if someone goes to Poro College, P-O-R-O, Paul Ocean, Ralph Ocean, porocollege.com, they can see how to order it. And I think it's such an important piece of history. You know, Carrie, I reached out to the top, the leaders in the hair care beauty industry, and only found two or three that even knew who Annie Malone was. And I said,
exactly.
I said, you know, that this is an important thing for people to learn about her so then they can begin to reanimate her legacy.
Well, I'll tell you something. It starts today. Dr. Freeman, I want to thank you again for being our very special guest right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're going to have you back to kind of, you know, continue this wonderful conversation. I think it was a great start, and you've helped to peel back just a little bit for us. And we've got some work to do. We've got some work to do. So we're going to have you back. Well, listen, I want to thank you again, and you, please remain on the line, Dr. Freeman. I'm going to close us out here, and
okay.
We're going to chat. All right, folks, keep it right here. There's a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to come. Thanks so much, Dr. Freeman.
It's two thumbs up. The Hair Radio Morning Show goes to the movies. It's our brand new Movie Talk radio segment. Listen live. Tune in right here on our broadcast for our unique review of the latest movie. Join us live on the air to chat. It's Movie Talk on the Hair Radio Morning Show. The Let Your Spirit Soar segment on the Hair Radio Morning Show is about getting your day and ours started with positive thoughts, well wishes, great quotes, and amazing affirmations. So if you have one you'd like to share, please send it through our Salon TV Network app, and we'll get it featured on the air.
I'm Carrie Hines. You're invited to be part of our new limited radio broadcast series, Talking About Cosby. It's our chance to collectively delve into the life and career and legacy of Bill Cosby, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, we've got great on-air commentators who will be lending their voices to this complex man's story, and we want to hear from you. Our mid-show hour from 7 to 8 a.m. Eastern, 6 to 7 Central, it's your chance to call in and speak live on the air. Go to our Facebook page, The Hair Radio Morning Show, for complete details.
As women, it seems like we carry the weight of the world on our shoulders. And that weight is directly balanced between your two feet. And with this balancing act, who do you think is suffering? It's not the kids. It's your feet. While running errands, paying bills, or dodging traffic, you could be ruining your feet. Wearing the wrong shoes for the wrong period of time can cause more damage than you think. Hammer toe and bunions are the leading deformities in black women, and Dr. Yolanda Raglan is the first black and only female podiatrist with practices dedicated solely to the correction of these type of deformities. So let this black girl do some magic and fix your feet. For more information, visit fixyourfeet.com, providing medically necessary surgery with a cosmetic result.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. Carrie Hines, it is Thursday morning, April 29th of 2021. I'd like to bring to the line my amazing co-stars. You guys know them well. We're talking about Harlem Will and Miss Terry. Harlem Will from Harlem, New York. And, of course, Miss Terry out of Georgia. Good morning, guys.
Hello,
good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. Yes, and to all of our amazing listeners, we just want to welcome everybody to the show. It's our, again, it's 555. So if you guys are into numerology, I think this is a great number. It's our 555th
let that sink in for a moment. 555th broadcast, a live broadcast. We're not even counting repeats. We're talking about live broadcast. So that's quite an amazing amount of folks that we've ushered in on the show. And I have to say, I'm very grateful. Folks, we're getting a lot of recognition from different people. We're known from coast to coast and literally around the world. It's quite an accomplishment. It really is. So I'm just here. We have our amazing team in place. So we're real, real happy. And Harlem Will, Miss Terry, what do you guys think when you hear 555 shows? Miss Terry, what do you think?
I think that's an amazing accomplishment to have 555 shows. That's a lot of shows, a lot of information. And I'm just glad I can be a part of that. Glad to be a part of that.
Awesome. Well, we're happy to have you. And Harlem Will, the man who has his own radio stuff going on, Harlem Will Powers, what do you say? What goes through your mind when you hear 555 live 3-hour broadcast? We are way out there. What goes through your mind?
Just to let you know, that's a lot of talk. There's a lot of
that
conversations in between 550 and episode number one. And it's just something something to aspire to. So that's a testament to your work.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I mean, it's 555. Again, it's our 555th show. Now, I will say this. It's really, yes, I appreciate that, and I'm out in front, but, you know, this is really a reflection of all of our input, and that's what this is. You guys are a big, big part of that, and I'm real proud to say that on air, and I'm very happy to have you on board. And then our listeners, well, you make up really our fourth host spot right now. It's our amazing fans who I hear from every day, who tune in and have something to comment. I read the feedback. I see what you guys are saying and what you gravitate towards, what you want us to be talking about. We have listeners from every corner of the planet and in different groups and all that wonderful stuff. So it's just my way to tip my hat on this April morning. It's the 29th. My goodness. It's technically a day before Hairstylist Day, which is actually tomorrow, right, Miss Terry?
Yes, yes, yes. Tomorrow,
and so
Hairstylist Day.
Are you going to be celebrating this year?
I'm excited. I'm celebrating for the rest of the year.
I kind of like that. Yes, you did say that. Every day is Hairstylist Day, technically, right?
Woo! Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Yes, and then following your Hairstylist Day, which again, that's most of the folks, they celebrate at the 30th of April, the last day of the month. And then we have ushered in with BHM, which stands for Black Hair Month. And we celebrate America, all of our contribution to the landscape, African-American contribution. I should say, not just African-American, but anything that's of color around the world, our contribution to the hair and beauty industry. And that's what this is. It's just a month to recognize that, our contribution. And then as many of, I've seen a few folks who love my cover that I did for the Hair Radio magazine. Each month we'll come out with a wonderful cover that kind of epitomizes or represents what we feel, like what we're working on during the month, what is really reflected behind the scenes at Hair Radio, the business, which is really awesome, which encompasses the radio show, our live events, my products, blah, 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 blah. So all that wonderful good stuff. So that's it. Harlem Will, I think we're going to have to lead on in with you. We start with you, though, this morning on the Hair Radio Show. What have you got, Harlem Will?
Well, I wanted to start off with, first of all, I wanted to start off with a show, with a story on the, the president gave his State of the Union address.
Yes.
He spoke yesterday. Now, I didn't get too many notes in on it because it was actually shorter than I expected, but it was still pretty long. So I didn't want to talk too much, but he basically talked about the, I would summarize it up by saying the thing he focused the most on was the vaccinations and what he wanted to do forward with green technology in the future. But he really made it a point that vaccinations had went out and that they've actually exceeded their mark that they wanted to by May 1st, which would be this Saturday, by the amount of people that they got vaccinations in. So I guess, like, I want to attack this issue in the future, but just off the strength right now, what would you, Terry Hines and Miss Terry, here on the Hair Radio Show this morning, catch us between 6 a.m. and 9 a.m. Every Tuesday through Friday. What do you guys think of President Biden so far, just from your opinions, from what you've seen? Let's start with Miss Terry. What do you think of Biden's work so far?
I think he's due to the fact that he had a lot of things on his plate that a lot of presidents haven't had to deal with. Things like the insurrection at the Capitol building, things like that. I feel like amongst those things, he's done a great job so far, because he's had a lot of things to deal with that presidents normally don't have to deal with. The pandemic as well is a big project that he definitely has to deal with that a lot of presidents haven't dealt with. So I think he's done a great job so far, as far as I can see.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
And for me, I'd like to give him two big thumbs up. I think that he deserves that. I did catch it last night. I was pretty much watching it here while working in the office, and I did see a part of it, a good part of it, a good portion, I should say. For me, I loved his recognition about the two women seated behind him. It's the first time in history that that's happened. So we're real proud of that, with Kamala Harris being the first black vice president in the history of our country. And
very
Nancy
proud
Pelosi,
of that.
Of course, yeah, Speaker of the House. So really good stuff. And they are in, those are the succession folks. So we are real proud of that. And he recognized that. Now, for me, I got a lot from his speech yesterday. He addressed everything in my book. I didn't think he left a stone unturned. I think he talked a great deal about these huge businesses and corporations that haven't paid a dime, not even forget a dime. They haven't even paid a penny in capital tax and federal tax. So this is federal taxes, I should say. So this is really alarming. I mean, to me, folks should be up in arms about it. And he was he spoke quite passionately about it. And I think most middle-class folks agree. So these are things that we should be conscious of. You know, I think everybody needs to be aware. I loved everything he brought up. He even talked about racism. He talked about, to me, I thought it was great, because we've gone for years and never heard even hardly a mention, or it was just a side or afterthought at best. So I was grateful to hear these things come to the surface. They have been bubbling up. It's time we address them. That's the problem, in my opinion, in America. We kind of sweep stuff under the rug. So we got to move away from that. We need to just, you know, let it come out. You know, my gosh. I do want to say, Ms. Terry, the insurrection, that was under Trump, though. Let me be real clear about that. He's had to deal with the aftermath of it. I think that's what
exactly,
you were talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah,
just the aftermath and yes.
Right. So that's what I kind of got. But I loved all of that. I think that he's on the right track. He's got a whole lot more work to do, because it's not just fancy language. It's not just, you know, being able to say what we want to hear so much. That was in the run-up to – that was the election kind of thing, run-up to the election in the general. You know, those are the kinds of things that you promise everybody. But, you know, he is trying to work through it. He did make the promise about 100 days in with regards to vaccine dissemination. I think, Will, you were talking about that. So I think we're off to a great start.
but there's still a lot more work to be done and remains to be seen. So I'm totally on board, and but I want to see the work get done. And so I also think we have to do our own part. Who was that, Kennedy? I think we who said something really great to that. I think we have to, each of us, we have to do our part. You know, it. I was just thinking yesterday or the day before, it really hit me. I mean, I've thought about this over time, but I really want to do more with the community. And I'm going to have to call up, you know, some friends I have in politics to see how to get that started. I want to definitely, you know, do some kind of community outreach or some food drives or set up some kind of food pantry. I don't know which way I'm going to go on it, but we are definitely going to do something. And I've done stuff in the past, like the Hair Radio Show. We've done salon and barbershops, food drives type stuff. But I want to kind of think about doing something, and I'm going to speak to some folks who know. So that's what I got to say about all that, Will. I think you asked me one question. There you go. So there you have it this morning. All right. What do you guys all think right. about that?
About what about the speech?
Well, the whole thing. What about all the community involvement rising to the level of what we, you know, taking things, you know, to help out the country and help out each other? I think that's what
the
show represents.
I think community is going to be big. I think that's a great thing that you're going to do because communities need local elections and local community events. That's what makes a community a community. You know, the fact that
exactly.
people know each other, they help each other. You know, they do events within the neighborhood. I know in my neighborhood, there's usually around the summertime. We usually have a block party every other 2 weeks, and we have dancers, music, musicians that come in and they perform their jazz. There's a Puerto Rican band that plays jazz and salsa from San Juan, and you know they have the people up there dressed. It's a big community thing. We're mixed with Puerto Rican, Dominican, and Mexican. I'm in Spanish Harlem. I live in Spanish Harlem, a great multi-diverse area. El Barrio is what we call it. And, yeah, the community, the sense of community is just, like, amazing. So, yeah, any kind of community events that we can actually bring people together and discuss events or just have a good time and support each other's businesses and arts and crafts and stuff, oh, that's a beautiful thing. Yeah, we need more of it. Around the nation, we need more of it. Particularly, and I would say this just to end it, particularly with communities that we're not so familiar with as well. I think that's the next step. We need to be able to communicate with other communities that we're not always talking with or socializing.
Absolutely.
With. That's
going to
be the next step, so we can actually understand each other and where each other's coming from in their stances. So, yeah, I totally champion your efforts, Terry, here on the Hair Radio Show.
Well, here in New York, I think we do it naturally, more so than other areas around the country, because we have such a melting pot, a diverse, population here in, especially in New York City. So I'm kind of proud of that, and like we say, there's a lot more work done, so I'm real happy about that. Got a few announcements. Want to check back with Will, Harlem Will Powers. In the house today, as they say. Anything else, Harlem Will?
We got these. So just a heads up as far as business. Just to hit you guys with some hit the audience with some business notes coming out of CNN Business reporting. Coming this summer, they're saying that gas stations are running out of gas due to. So they start off the article in CNN. Millions of people stuck at home for more than a year are expected to hit the road for much-needed post-pandemic vacations. I know I want to do it this summer. Good luck finding gas. Not that there's a looming shortage of crude oil or gasoline. Rather, it's the tanker truck drivers needed to deliver the gas stations who are in short supply. According to the National Tank Truck Carriers, the industry's trade groups, somewhere between 20% to 25% of tank trucks in the fleet are parked headed into the summer due to a due to a shortage of qualified drivers. So that is what they're saying is there are not a lot of qualified commercial truck drivers out there who can actually handle the crude oil, the hazmat license that is required to drive the trucks. And that is interesting because the trucking industry is extremely huge. That is one of the best. It's one of the biggest job providers in America. Like, that is our thing. So to see a shortage of drivers is actually quite astonishing. That is one of the most American things when you think about an American trucker. What do you think about this? What do you guys think about this? Starting off with we started off with Terry. Let's go with Kerry. Kerry, what did you think of it so far?
Well, I mean, it is very interesting when I hear something like this. I haven't heard anything about a shortage of gasoline in quite a few years. Certainly the earliest I remember is back in the 70s, they had a big shortage, and they had to, they used to go by license plates in order for the line, and it would be so long that they had to ration off the fuel for the cars way back when. And I think maybe some in recent times, and there have been all kinds of spillages and this and that, spills and leaks and all that kind of stuff. But as far as I think it's interesting, I have a lot of friends who are truck drivers. I have some who my very first co-host, Elena, shouting her out this morning, who's an author, as well as a truck driver. So she drives the big tractors, and also another one of our founding fathers, if you will, Eddie, one of my very good friends out of New Jersey. He's also a truck driver. And so I'm going to have to check in with these folks and see. But I'm surprised there's a shortage. I think it's an amazing industry, and I think they're doing a great job, and I'm very surprised. But I think they better hop on it. And I hope that's alleviated because most folks, as you pointed out, they kind of moved away from flying everywhere. And then also, but when it comes to the fuel for the aircraft, that's a whole different thing. They usually buy their stuff so much in advance and all of that. So that's probably a little different. But I think they better get on it and keep us, informed about this. Ms. Terry, what do you think?
Well, I mean, I hold a CDL license myself, and if they're paying enough for these drivers, I definitely will upgrade that to a hazmat endorsement.
Oh, I thought you were about to say you will drive.
I will.
I thought you were going.
I will.
Okay.
No, I will drive. I will upgrade my endorsement.
Yeah,
to
your hazmat endorsement. Right.
To drive to get the gas where it needs to go.
Okay, well, we've got it right here. That's, you heard it. Well, all the folks heard it. So that will hold you to that.
I'm wondering, is the shortage, because we don't have a shortage right now, I guess they feel like there's going to be so many people moving from place to place. And like you said, instead of flying, driving. And that's probably what is going to cause the shortage, because there's going to be so many people trying to move around in their vehicles, and everybody's been locked up and not unable to go where they want to go. So everybody's trying to go to the beach or to the mountains or wherever. So hopefully they can get the shortage solved or get enough drivers to sign up to move this gas around and get it where it needs to go. Because we definitely need it.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like it seems to be an employee shortage. They don't have qualified drivers out there that's able to move these vehicles. And, that's the thing, too. A lot of people, and this is something, too, is, I'm glad Ms. Terry holds a CDL as well as me. I hold commercial driver's license. This is a trait. It takes skill to drive those tractor trailers. It takes skill to drive those 26-footers. So this is not...
Well, I thought about it. I have thought about it. I'm raising my hand, too, right now. I don't have a CDL, but I do want to say I definitely... It's crossed my mind because here in Brooklyn, I don't know about over there in Harlem, Will, but in Brooklyn, I don't know about over there in Harlem, Will, but here in Brooklyn, I remember they used to have it in the newspapers. This was back in the days when you actually got a physical newspaper, and they used to always have about, you know, where you can study and become a truck driver. So I thought about it. I really did, because I love highway driving. I'm one of those strange people. Mm-hmm. I love highway driving. It doesn't, and I mean, I could go long distance. It doesn't bother me at all. I love it. I love it. Well, and I have, because I think I had, just to digress just for a tad, I had learned about driving on a stick. So that was my first car. So having a stick shift always kind of made it easier. So I would love to get on. In the Northeast, we have parkways and highways, unlike you guys out in California, who, you know, who have freeways. But so I loved that on a highway, you didn't have to shift gears so much. So that's why I kind of started to appreciate being on the highway road. And I really do. So I've always thought about becoming a truck driver, and I thought that maybe that would be something I would pursue. So I'm shouting out all you guys and all the folks out there, and let's hope that this is remedied. So good stuff, Harlem Will. Real proud of those great stories that you bring us each day right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And Miss Terry, you guys are doing a great job in finding things that we're talking about. And by the way, I guess this is a really good time for me to mention, we're always looking for folks to be part of our Hair Radio Morning Show team. So if you think you have what it takes to contribute, to be a researcher, to be behind the scenes at Hair Radio, kind of like an unofficial internist producer type role or capacity, please take a moment to let us know. You can simply tweet us at Hair Radio, HAIRADIO, just one R, or of course across any of the Facebook platforms that we have. My Facebook, profile, all that type of stuff. Just find us at Hair Radio, the Hair Radio Morning Show. You can Google us, for goodness sakes. We're across everything. And so please let us know. We'd be real honored to hear from you. Google us, Google Carrie Hines, Google the Hair Radio Morning Show. You'll see a whole bunch of stuff out there, pages, literally. So real good stuff. And, you know, so I do want to talk a little bit more about all the stuff that's going on. We have the Road to Healthy Hair Workshop. We have so many folks who are coming from the West Coast to that event. Real, real excited. Really, really good stuff. And if you guys tuned in, we have some amazing shows these last couple of days. We're real happy. Need to shout out Sam Innan for being such a great guest. Smooth Black was also on. All these folks have decided to wake up early and be part of our live audience. Not live audience, but live show. So they've just knocked it out, and I think it's really hard to do because it's like 4 or 5 in the morning that they're on the air with you to provide information and to share their little knowledge and stuff. So I think it's awesome. So, you know, what do you guys think about that? Miss Terry, have we not had a great couple of days on the show?
We have definitely had a wonderful lineup of guests come in and just giving us information on different things. A lot of things I didn't know. I was listening also this morning about Annie Malone. Had no idea, just like he said, I've never heard her name. So we definitely have been having great guests. Smooth Black giving us information on the industry, great information on the industry. So, yeah, I've definitely enjoyed the guests that we've had in this week. Great guests.
Okay.
Yes.
Awesome. And Harlem Will, what about you?
Yeah, Sam Meenan and Smooth Black have been, they've been revelations for me this week. I couldn't say enough about them. I definitely enjoy I've enjoyed this week. The going through the ups and downs, the roller coasters of this week so far. Just getting back into the flow of the show, but it's been great when you have guests like this coming in. And I just, you know, because the Hair Radio Show always has such amazing guests that comes on, I'm just bathing in all the experience at this point. So yeah, bring it on.
Wonderful. There's a lot more. I do want to take a moment to acknowledge that. That's a perfect lead-in, a perfect transition over to our Hair Radio Awards. And also, Annie Malone, let me just take a moment for those of you who are just tuning in. Our lead-off interview this morning was with the amazing Dr. Freeman, who has co-authored a book along with Walter Milton Jr., who they wrote a book called Black History 365, which is really, it's an inclusive account of American history. But first, Dr. Freeman was on the show by himself, and that's what we aired this morning, in which he goes in about his life, and this is a Caucasian gentleman who was a chaplain for the NBA and all these other amazing things, and he goes in and talks a lot about race and things of that nature on the broadcast. And he has a huge collection of artifacts from Africa. He's out in Maryland, based out in Maryland, and he was our wonderful lead interview this morning. And so really, really nice stuff, and I'm just really proud. Annie Malone, okay, here's the deal with Annie Malone. And I've chatted with her relatives as well and know these folks as well. And for those of you who have Netflix, there was a movie that's out there called Self-Made, and it's really about the story of, loosely based story on Madam C.J. Walker, who has been noted as the first self-made female millionaire. Now, I didn't say black, because she was truly the first period self-made female millionaire in America. Now, there's been a huge debate amongst those in the hair and beauty community. I call the hair and beauty elite community. Okay. You have all these folks, and what they've been kind of debating about is, well, who was really the first African-American or the first female self-made millionaire in the country? Who? Was it Madam C.J. Walker, which almost everybody's familiar with, or was it Annie Malone? So that has been the debate. And So I've chatted with just about everybody. In fact, I think I'll go ahead and air that so that way you guys can hear it firsthand. But Annie Malone was someone who, in my opinion, started everything. Madam C.J. Walker herself worked for Annie Malone. And Annie Malone started with the hair products. She was the first beyond the others. Now, there were other women out there kind of doing stuff around the same time. But Annie Malone was the very first. And she was super rich and had taxes, I think, in the state. I forget which state. I think Michigan. Was it? I think St. Louis. Out in Missouri, I believe. But a lot of this information is out there. But she did. She paid more taxes than anybody else at that time. Annie Malone went on to have she did a lot of stuff for children. So she was just a well-known. She started Poro College, which was a beauty cultural type school that the famous Chuck Berry himself, the rock and roller, went to. He was a hairstylist. Most folks don't know that. And he was like the father of rock and roll for black folks and for everybody pretty much. And so he went to Poro College himself, along with a lot of other people of color. And so she had these amazing schools literally all over the world and all these fancy cars. And so she ran into a lot of financial difficulty through, like, bad marriages and things like that and tax issues and stuff. So that's why she was not so much recognized at the end of her life, with being some reported during her life that she had like 13, 14, 15 million. And if you can imagine this being the early 1900s, what that would mean today. So she had a lot of money. Now, Madam Walker,
at the time of her death, and you'll hear Alelia talk about it, she was worth about $1 million. And that's on paper. So I asked Alelia herself, who is the great-great-granddaughter, about this feud between the two women. Because when you watch the TV movie that's based on Alelia's book, when you watch it, it's dramatized and it's not all that realistic. You know, I know, of course, you know, the real story, but for those of you watching it, it's a little bit more fictionalized. So, you know, so you got to bear that in mind. So anyway, but I think this is really great. And I think this is a great time for us. Let me get this on because I'd like for you to hear it. It also is a great lead into our entrepreneurial talk in the next hour, and I think you'll appreciate it. So let me set this up because this is this was long before the actual movie that hit on Netflix, and the movie is called Self-Made, and it stars Octavia Spencer. Talk about basketball. Octavia Spencer co-produced it with the amazing LeBron James. So this was really big, and I'm real happy about that. Yes, Octavia, who won the Oscar out there. I think she did win the Oscar for The Help, if I'm not mistaken. So lots of good stuff, and I go right to the top. So this is Alelia Bundle, so it's the great-great-granddaughter of Madam C.J. Walker herself, and had a chance to chat with her. So take a listen. I'll be back towards the end here, and we'll go back live, and we'll pick up from there on some of the entrepreneurial talk. So here's my chat with Alelia Bundles. Again, this was before the TV movie came out, so this is our classic interview. So don't think this is something that just pops up, but at least this will shed some light on give you guys some context, and especially this is very helpful. Will kind of talks a little bit about the hair industry. So take a listen. We'll be back. You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now I have a very special guest with us today. Her name is Alelia Bundles, and we'll have her tell you the rest. Good morning, Alelia. Good morning to you, and welcome
to the show. Good morning, Carrie.
Yes, it's great to have you with us here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, I just want to jump right on in. Let's let you tell us about the amazing lineage that you have in the hair and beauty industry. Go right ahead. You take it away, Alelia.
Well, I grew up with two parents who worked in the hair care industry. My great-great-grandmother is Madam C.J. Walker. My mother was vice president of the Walker Company when I was growing up, and my dad was president of Summit Laboratories. So we spent our vacations going to hair shows.
Wow. Well, you know what? Let's start off there. Tell us a little bit more about, now we're a little bit more familiar, obviously, with your great-great-grandmother and even your mother's work, your grandmother's work and so forth. But tell us a little bit more about your grandfather, was it, that you were just mentioning?
My father was president of Summit Laboratories, and my mom was vice president of the Walker Company.
Oh, okay. Now tell us about the Summit Laboratories. So what did he do?
Summit Labs, so in the late 1950s, when companies like Johnson and Saucheen and Summit were developing the chemical hair straighteners, and you know, people were going from the hot comb to chemical straighteners, then my dad was president of one of those companies. So when I was growing up, actually the Summit Labs was the bigger deal, was the more successful company financially, but the Walker Company, that was founded by my great-great-grandmother, Madam C.J. Walker, in 1906, certainly continues to have the legacy as a founder of the black hair care industry.
I see, and that's what I wanted to kind of jump on in. I just wanted to mention a little bit for us that it might have been lesser known. Amazing. Now, let us kind of elaborate a little bit on that. When someone mentions to you, and I know you've done a million of these interviews, and of course everybody wants to ask you, what is it like being
related to the person that we consider who started the entire black hair care industry. So I have to ask you the same question, Lilia.
It's perfectly fine. So I will tell you, you know, as a kid, I wasn't paying a lot of attention to it. And my mother, who was the fourth generation of women in her family to be an executive with the Walker Company, was really wise about not making it a big deal because you don't really want to overwhelm kids with something like that. And so she kind of let me discover it on my own. I would ride with her to the Walker Building in Indianapolis, which was this beautiful block-long flat iron building where the company was based, the factory, the ballroom, a theater, you know, a drugstore, a beauty shop. So I would get out of the car with her, ride up the elevator to her office where in the late 1950s she had an adding machine and a typewriter before computers and calculators.
Oh, yeah.
So I experienced that, the Walker Company, in that way, going back with my mother to the factory and talking to the ladies who were still, you know, working there and putting the products into the jars by hand. So I had that kind of memory. And then my real love was writing, and both of my parents encouraged me to follow my dreams so that when I got to graduate school at Columbia in journalism, my advisor was a sister named Phyllis Garland, the only black woman on the faculty at the journalism school. And Phil recognized my name, Alelia, which is Madam Walker's daughter's name. And she said, your name is Alelia. Do you have any connection to Madam Walker and Alelia Walker? And I think she probably knew the answer, but I wasn't walking around talking about it all the time. And Phil, after listening to some of my lame topics for my master's paper, said, you know, you are going to write about Madam Walker. And that was in 1975. And really, Phil validated it for me at a time when nobody else was really saying you need to write a book about this amazing woman.
Wow. Well, I have to say also, the fact that you have, that you are a part of this amazing lineage that we feel has really shaped everything that we know about here in BDISA, what do folks, I mean, when they come up to you, is it something that they're really nervous and, like you were saying, you know, maybe apprehensive about? And what does that mean to you?
You know, I think the thing that's really the most special thing for me is that I get a chance to tell this story. And, you know, and again, as a young person, I was kind of self-conscious about it. I was really, you know, much more interested in Alelia Walker and her Harlem Renaissance life. But what I, you know, as I became more mature and as I really began to understand who Madam Walker was, I realized that her story inspires other people. And it is about hair, and it is about her being a pioneer of what's now a multi-billion-dollar industry. But it's also about her challenges and her overcoming obstacles and being an entrepreneur, being a single mother, and having early struggles in her life. And then being able to employ thousands of other women, helping them become economically independent, and taking it even to another level by becoming a philanthropist and a patron of the arts. So she used her wealth and her influence to make a difference in her community. That began to become as important to me as the hair care part.
Wow. Amazing. And we're going to get into that because there is still, you guys are a part of providing still hair care products that carry Madam C.J. Walker's name.
Yes.
Yes, tell us a little bit about that. We'd love to hear more.
So the Madam C.J. Walker Company was founded in 1906 and really was one of the premier black-owned hair care companies into the 1950s. But it was, you know, the market was disrupted by companies like Summit and Softsheen and Johnson Products who were doing a different way, creating new products for black women. And so the Walker Company began to, you know, sales began to drop off in the late 50s, but the company never went out of business. And about six years ago, Richelieu Dennis, the CEO of Sundial Brands, bought the trademark and has, as we know, reformulated Madam C.J. Walker Beauty Culture. So there now are 24 products, all new formulas that are available at Sephora. And I think, you know, sometimes I do still get emails and phone calls from people who say, now, can I buy that original Madam Walker's Wonderful Hair Grower? You know, my grandmama used to use that, and that was... And I just try to be really gentle with folks and say, you know, 106 years ago, this was revolutionary, which was essentially petrolatum like Vaseline and sulfur that healed dandruff and scalp infections. We needed that then in 1906. We have learned, we've had 100 years of research and development, and we have taken advantage of that with these new products and these new formulas.
Absolutely. And to have done something that has such an impact, I mean, to be at Sephora, and here in New York, that's like huge to us here. So outstanding. And I love the work that they're doing. So we're going to shout out those folks, you know, with the new voices and all that they're doing. So good work. Now, hey, I have to ask you, and folks out there, if you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. This morning we're chatting literally with, I call hair royalty, Lilia Bundles. And I just have to say also, now, you've got some exciting new projects to get into and to talk about a little bit. I think, yes, we're going to talk about this amazing TV series that everybody's talking about. It literally is all over the news everywhere. But before we get to that, Lilia, I do want to talk about, you've written several books. Mm-hmm. And I know you're working on your biography, which I'm really excited to talk to you about. But yes, tell us a little bit about some of the books that you've written, if you don't mind. And also, do you prefer to kind of write more? Like, you do so many different wonderful things.
So I have written four books about Madam Walker, and I wrote my first one, a young adult book, in 1991. And believe it or not, that was the first book that had ever been written about Madam Walker. Then I did a major biography called On Her Own Ground, The Life and Times of Madam C.J. Walker. And that is the book that is in development as an 8-part Netflix series starring Octavia Spencer and executive produced by Octavia Spencer and LeBron James. I've written another book for young readers and then a book that has 200 photographs called Madam Walker Theater Center. The book that I'm almost finished with now is a biography of Madam Walker's daughter, Alelia Walker, called The Joy Goddess of Harlem, and that will come out next year. But, you know, the books are something, telling this story and really being able to document it was important to me because there's so many myths and so much misinformation really about any African-American or female historical figure that somebody has to write kind of the first marker of getting the facts right. And that's what I've really tried to do in writing the books about her.
Well, we have to toss in the mix. There is the first thing that everyone has said when you hear Madam C.J. Walker's name is the straightening comb and the first black female millionaire. Those are the two things that we attribute to Madam C.J. Walker. But it's wonderful to have you to fill in, you know, and also kind of, you know, set the record straight, literally.
Yes, well, that is literally and untangle the myths. But I mean,
I like
you
that.
Know, I tell you, so the straightening comb is, it's like essential. People believe that, and it's like, but you know, my mama told me that, and my auntie told me that, and so that must be true. And I'm sorry to contradict your mama, but Madam Walker did not invent the hot comb.
And everybody believes that.
But really, you know, and I actually wrote part of there's a Wikipedia entry on the hot comb, and I, you know, anybody can write, and I did a ton of research to just make sure people understand hot combs were around when Madam Walker was still working in the cotton fields in Louisiana. Other people had invented them. They were for sale in the Bloomingdale's and Sears catalogs in the 1890s. So this was long before she started her business. So I just want people to understand that. And actually, you know, I will say that part of my ambivalence about her when I was a child of the 60s and, you know, going from my perm to my afro was I don't know what, you know, what I think about that. And as I began to do research, I realized that often what happens with famous people is somebody has, you know, one thing that they think they know about that person, and sometimes that one thing is actually incorrect. And what I learned about her and her original products is that, like many women, she was going bald because she had bad dandruff and scalp infections because people didn't have indoor plumbing. They didn't wash their hair very often. They covered their hair up. They didn't wash it sometimes at all in the winter. And she was trying to figure out what to do to grow her hair, not to necessarily have straight hair. So that was really a revelation for me to really discover that. So no, Madam Walker did not invent the hot comb. What she did was to create a line of products that shampoo and ointment with sulfur that healed dandruff and scalp disease, and really began scalp massages, and then just a whole system of pampering women. That was really what she was about. And I think that it was, I think what she discovered, because she'd had such a hard life, is that women's souls and spirits needed healing as much as their scalps. So she was kind of charismatic and, you know, sort of had a ministry almost of empowering women.
I love it. It sounds to me as like it's not just what's on your head, but what's in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So I love it. Now, I do have to ask you, the TV series, we absolutely have to talk about this. We are excited. You touched on it a moment or two ago. This amazing opportunity to bring this story to life about Madam C.J. Walker, your great-great-grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and you mentioned that it's starring Oscar winner Octavia Spencer.
Yes.
And she's also co-executive producing. So it doesn't get much better than that.
Exactly.
Now, along with LeBron James. How did something like that come about that you can share with us today? What can you
Sure. Well, you know, stories that you've heard, well, you know, the book was written and then it took 1,000 years for the movie to happen. It feels like a thousand years. But it is very much a part of, I think, where we are right now with who we are on television and in movies and asserting ourselves, so that when my book came out, when On Her Own Ground came out in 2001, it actually had already been optioned for a TV movie. But it was one of those things where it was optioned, the script was written, the script wasn't acceptable to the studio, and the executive who optioned it got fired.
Wow.
And then the option came back to me. And I had another few examples of that happened over the, you know, sort of the last decade and a half. And a couple of years ago, I got a phone call from Mark Holder, who is head of Zero Gravity Management, and they produce, TV series and movies. And we talked, and I'd been talking to a lot of other people, and I liked him. I liked our conversation. And he began to try to shop this around and had conversations with a variety of people, met with Octavia Spencer thinking that they would talk about her being in the series.
Sure.
And she said, well, yes, I'd like to do that, and I'd like to be an executive producer. And so that's really how we got to this point. And then it's, you know, it takes a little while to get it sold. And
right.
So Warner Brothers, you know, bought the property, and then Netflix will be the platform on which it airs.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. And this, and I'm sure you realize this, but it's so nice to see and see our stories being told, and I love Netflix for recognizing this and all of the Warner Brothers and everybody else, because this is so important for us to see and for the millions of folks who, you know, are going to be exposed to the story on so many other levels. It's just, you know, amazing. So I'm excited.
Yeah, and, you know, there's part of me that says, you know, I wish it had happened, but, you know, things happen when they are supposed to happen. And to have Octavia Spencer in this role with, you know, what she brings to just to life in general.
Absolutely.
And to have LeBron James and his strong voice even associated with it, it means to me that it's going to be much more powerful than it ever would have been if it had been done, you know, a few years ago when we didn't have this same sense of we must tell our stories, we must speak up right now for our survival.
Well, I just love it because, again, that's going to, you're right, the time is right now where it can, the voice can be heard probably the loudest, I think, is, I don't know, you know, for lack of a better way to say that, but yes, amazing. So one of the other things that, before we let you go today, I definitely wanted to kind of address one more myth that is kind of out there, but even if there's part of it, maybe you can help us to just clarify it. We have, for myself and 24 years being in this business and the hair and beauty industry, I've heard so much goings on about the battle between these amazing women in the hair and beauty industry at the beginning stages of everything. So I have to toss out the name to you, Annie Malone. And when someone says that to you, the great-great-granddaughter of Madam C.J. Walker, what goes through your mind?
Well, you know, first of all, when I was doing the research for On Her Own Ground, I wanted to make sure that I was being as accurate as possible. So I've researched, you know, to the nth degree. And I discovered a lot of material about Annie Malone. I made sure that I found out as much as I could about her. And I included her and their interactions with each other in my book. So I would say that I, perhaps more than almost anybody else up until that time, tried to talk about the conflicts between the two women, because I thought that was an important part of the story.
Absolutely.
So, and one of the things that is critical for me, and one of the things that I'm very fortunate to have, is thousands of pages of Madam Walker's correspondence and business records, and then years, decades really now, of research about her. So I document everything that I write. If it's in my book, it's because I have found not one, not two, but two, three or four sources to verify what I'm saying. And we're lucky that we can do that with Madam Walker because she hired great staff and had a lawyer who kept good records. Annie Malone is much harder to document because she had a lot of turmoil in her life with a bad divorce and a husband who sabotaged her and some, I think, some bad decisions on people that she hired. And so there are almost no documents and no records about her. So it's hard to, you know, hard to pull her story together. But what I have tried to do by reading dozens of old newspapers and looking at what Annie Malone was doing every step of the way whenever she was mentioned in the newspaper, and I mean dozens of newspapers, and the same with Madam Walker. Here's my conclusion. It comes to several things. They were both really important women. They were both really important pioneers of the modern hair care industry. And they were competitors. They were rivals. Madam Walker, in fact, sold Malone's products for a few months while she lived in St. Louis and after she moved to Denver. Malone accused Madam Walker of stealing her formula, but in fact, that formula was not new. It had been used for hundreds of years. It's in medical texts and pharmaceutical texts. Cuticure was already on the market. Vaseline was already on the market. These were the kinds of things that she was using. There were other people, other black people, who had products that were very similar that they called Wonderful Hair Grower that they advertised in newspapers. So these were two women who kind of were equals and rivals. Madam Walker, I think there are some reasons why she was more remembered. Madam Walker died at the height of her fame in 1919. She had just built a mansion on the Hudson River in the wealthiest community in America. She had moved, her daughter had moved to Harlem in 1913, so their profile was much higher. Malone remained in St. Louis. She married a man who really, as I say, sabotaged her.
Right.
And so I think at a really critical time in her the development of her company, she had some obstacles that were really pretty insurmountable. Now, as to the question of who was a millionaire,
yes.
As a journalist and as a historian, I'm really careful about this. And here's what I can say. When Madam Walker died, in May of 1919, she was worth $1 million. We have documents. The estate had to be probated. They had to pay taxes. So her personal worth was between $600,000 and $700,000 during that period of time. It would be millions now, equal to millions now. Right. The worth of her company, based on the sales of the last 2 years of her life, would have been somewhere between $1 million and $2 million, a lot more today, translated in today's dollars. We can document that to say at the time of her death, she was a millionaire. With Malone, based on what I can see in newspaper articles, based on a lawsuit that one of her employees brought against her in 1915, I cannot see that she was a millionaire at that point. In 1927, when she and her husband were getting divorced, the newspapers call her company a million-dollar company. So that is really the first time that that appears in the news coverage. There is, and I would just add one more thing, that when she died in 1957, there was a newspaper article, either in the Chicago Defender or the Pittsburgh Courier, that says her company was worth $14 million. That number, I think, is pulled out of thin air. And by the time she died in 57, there was, you know, the company, she'd gone through bankruptcy and tax issues and all that kind of thing. So I don't think that that was an accurate number, and there's no documentation. So my conclusion is they were both really great women. They were competitors. They had a really fierce right. competition. And, you know, and I think Madam Walker was a millionaire. I know she was a millionaire when she died in 1919. I have not seen documentation for Malone.
Well, I have to say, I thank you, Alelia Bundles, for setting the record straight right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. It has been, those are questions and, like I said, myths and innuendos and all kinds of rumors and everything that has just floated in this arena, you know, for a long, long time. And
people are fierce when they talk about this.
Yes. Oh, yes. And I've met quite a few. And it's still exciting. That's, you know, it's always good to be being talked about. So,
well, and they were both philanthropists. They really,
yes.
you know, they empowered
yes.
women. So, and Madam Walker even said at one point, I wish that we could get beyond the ill feeling.
Wow. Oh, this is going to be a juicy TV series. So look for this on Netflix. Again, it's based on your book. And, you know, I just want to remind everybody, make certain, you know, to pick up your books. You've written several out there. You have the new biography coming out.
Right, on Alelia Walker next year.
Oh, okay, that's the biography. Okay.
Right, now, right, yeah. So that one I'm almost finished with.
Okay. Well, now, what would you like to leave us? When you talk about, you know, the hair care industry and where we are now and whether it's product-related or the legacy that you so stand and, you know, so proudly in that light, what would you like to tell folks? What anything you want to leave us with today that really kind of sums it all up and brings it on home?
Well, you know, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. It's just really a pleasure to talk with you and to know about the important work that you are doing. And I think we're in a really amazing time in terms of black women and hair. We have gone through the hair wars. We've gone back and forth. We've had this and we've had that.
Yes.
And now I think we're at a point where there are so many wonderful products that really address the textures of our hair that it has given us the freedom to be able to create the most amazing styles. You know, I'm, again, a child of the 60s, and so we went from that transition from perms and hot combs to afros, and we had sort of one style. It was, you know, Angela Davis, and that was it. It was either a long afro with a blowout or a short one. And so, but now I look at what especially young women are doing with everything from, you know, hair color and amazing braids and natural hair and short and long and twisted and, you know, it's fantastic. And I think that I love that Madam Walker has a little bit of a part to play in where we are, and I love that we have the freedom and the confidence and, you know, the courage to do all kinds of things with our hair and be proud of ourselves.
I have...
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
Just like the eyes are the window to the soul, the scalp is the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. The way to obtain it is with Stimulating Roots. Stimulating Roots will exfoliate and detoxify your scalp, promoting healthy hair growth. Stimulating Roots has a system to detoxify and grow your hair. Their shampoo combines menthol, camphor, and pink grapefruit essential oil to improve blood circulation in the scalp. Their conditioner, that stimulates, moisturizes, and hydrates the hair. The regeneration oil, that contains essential oils that work together to promote hair growth while calming an itchy, dry, and irritated scalp. Open the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. Awaken the senses to your scalp with Stimulating Roots. This is available at StimulatingRoots.com. That's StimulatingRoots, R-U-T-Z.com.
The Hair Radio Morning Show is proud to honor the incredible achievements of Ms. Cicely Tyson. And from today forward, all of our in-studio live guests will wait here to go on the air in our newly minted Cicely Tyson Hair Radio Morning Show Green Room. Stay tuned.
Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
She just wants to be beautiful. She goes unnoticed. She knows no limits. She craves attention. She praises. An image she prays to be sculpted by the sculptor. Oh, she don't see the light that's shining deeper than the eyes can find it. Maybe we're made of blind souls. She tries to cover up her pain and cut her woes away. Discover girls don't cry after the face is made. But there's a hope that's waiting for you.
This is a reminder. Our live call-in lines are open now. Simply press 1 if you've already dialed in. And remember, we keep the call-in lines open and available throughout the broadcast. Call 516-453-9458. And remember to press 1 if you have a comment or would like to say a shout-out. The Hair Radio Morning Show is your voice in the mornings. Stay with us.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Gary Hines.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. Yes, I'm Gary Hines. It is Thursday morning, April 29th of 2021. It's our show number 555. I've been waiting for a long time to be able to say that. And coming to the line right now out of Georgia, she's kind of guest co-hosting with me this morning, Miss Terry. Good morning, and welcome again to the show. Yes, good morning, and hey to you.
Good morning.
Yeah. Are we not enjoying this? If you guys are just joining us, we were just kind of tuned into the amazing Alelia Bundles, who is the great-great-granddaughter of the woman who started it all. Well, there's still some debate about that, but we're talking about the amazing Alelia Bundles, who was the great-great-granddaughter of Madam C.J. Walker. And the miniseries is still on Netflix, which is called Self-Made, which is loosely based on Alelia's book. So do check it out if you get a chance. We've had some discussions about this, Miss Terry. When the movie came out, we had big panel discussions. We had a nighttime special here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We celebrated. Alelia has been at my events as well in Atlantic City at one of our Hair Nation Expo events. And so we've just, you know, we have a long history with these amazing folks. And I've also interviewed not just the Madam Walker side, but I've also interviewed the Annie Malone side. They're two historical societies. Yeah, well, we're Hair Radio. Right to the source. Right to the source.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we're doing it up here, and I'm very proud and very happy about that. Now, I want to turn to someone else, and you'll never guess who we're turning to.
I don't know. Surprise me.
It's you.
Oh.
I thought I would.
Okay.
I got you there. I got you.
Yes, you did.
I figured I would. Well, listen, what this is all about, Miss Terry, is to take a moment to, you know, to ask some questions, to get our amazing fans from literally every corner of the earth, and we're shouting them out this morning. We absolutely want to make sure that they get a little bit of a snapshot into who Miss Terry is. So
right,
there are no
right.
wrong answers here. This is where you get an opportunity,
okay,
like we just had with Alelia, to set the record straight, where she went through and demystified a lot of the myths that we misunderstood about what we thought we knew about the amazing Madam C.J. Walker. And I do want to say one other thing. Alelia herself has worked for like 2 TV networks. So, you know,
wow,
for anybody who's like even doubting who she is, she was at like NBC and I think also ABC. I mean, she's very, very, very well-studied person and very connected,
okay,
obviously. And so, to put it mildly. So we just love her here at the Hair Radio Show and support all the things that all the folks out there are doing. And that's why I said we're turning to you on that, Ms. Terry. This is a great time to look at some of the things that you've done. So let's fill in some of the blank slate there and take a moment.
Okay.
We know that you're a fan contributor on the Hair Radio Morning Show, and right now you're kind of like our guest co-host for this towards the, you know, going into the end of the show. So tell us a little bit about who you are. Were you, we know that you're in Georgia. Were you born in Georgia? Is this, you know, where you were
born and based and your family's from Georgia? Like my family, from my both parents were born in North Carolina, but I'm from Philly. I'm from Philadelphia,
okay.
Pennsylvania.
Oh,
so,
wow.
But what about, yeah, that's where I was born. So
yeah.
What about you?
I was actually born in Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Chattanooga, no, hold it. Any
yes.
Any city out there with about four syllables in the name always gets me. Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
I never thought that was a real place. My goodness.
Chattanooga,
Tennessee
okay. is a real place.
Okay, and shout out to our folks in Chattanooga. I'm just kidding with you guys.
Right.
So how was that
yeah.
experience? Yeah, that,
you know,
that's the South.
Yes, it is. And so it was, I have a lot of really great memories, even though I moved away when I was about 7 years old. But Chattanooga was definitely, it was an experience because we lived in a house, and my grandmother lived down the street from us. And it was really interesting because my grandmother didn't have water in her house. So we would have to go outside to the well, like a Jack and Jill well, and we used to have to let the bucket down into the well, and we would draw up some water. And we would have to take
that
it
was
into
the only
the house.
Water? There was no running water inside
there was
the
no
house?
No running water inside her house. And also she had an outhouse where you would go to use the restroom.
Now, was
and
the
so,
outhouse really outside?
Yes. It was made of wood, and it had this really big hole that you would have. It was kind of, I guess, it was similar to what a toilet is today, but it was made of wood, and this is like a, almost like a, basically, so this is how I could explain it. If you're familiar with a portalette that they use at different events, it was basically a portalette, but it was made out of wood. The entire thing was made out of wood. So about the same size as a portalette, and it has that giant hole in it like a portalette does, but everything was made out of wood from top to bottom. And
well,
so
where did
that
the stuff go?
I would
did
not
it
be
just
able
go
to
into
answer
the ground?
That question. I would not be able to answer that question. If you ask me from just looking, I would say, yes, it went into the ground somewhere, but I would have at five, six years old, I have no idea.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Well, I'm just amazed that you even know of that. That is so historical all by itself. And,
yes, and so,
I mean, wow. Go ahead. What
yeah,
a story.
At night, she would have just like I guess, what is it, 5 gallon bucket or 10 gallon bucket?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you would use at night if you had to use the bathroom.
Like bathing type thing?
Like, you know how they have like the huge buckets. But if you had to use the restroom at night, you use the bucket. So you wouldn't have to go down.
Wow.
You wouldn't have to go down through the little path to the outhouse at night in the dark. You would just use the bucket.
Until the morning.
Yes. And so I have really, really fond memories of that. And my grandmother also had different types of like fruit trees. And so she had a lot of plum trees, a lot of apple trees, a lot of pear trees. So it was really the country.
It was really the country. But how did, yes, but go ahead.
It definitely was memorable. Right across the street from my house, our house, there was a railroad track that was down off of a cliff. So if we walked to the edge of the cliff, we could look down and see the train go past. But it was like 20 feet down probably. So there was a train track that ran across the street from my house, and you could look down in a deep, it may have been 30 feet, but I was always scared to get too close to the edge, but the train was down in the, like a hole. That's what a six-year-old, seven-year-old would say. But anyway, it was definitely an interesting place to live. And so
wow.
At the age of seven, my father passed away, and my mother moved us to Florida along with her mother. So I would say I was born in Tennessee and stayed there until I was about seven. And then once my dad passed, my mom wanted to move back home with her family, which was in Florida, right outside of Jacksonville, Florida. And so that's pretty much where I got my, you know, the main part of my upbringing from age seven on up to becoming an adult. Definitely an interesting place as well. We were probably about 7 miles from the beach. So it was definitely a beach town, and we had to cross a bridge every morning to go to school, go to high school. We went to high school on an island. So that was also a really neat thing to actually go to high school on an actual island. And so pretty much we stayed there until I became an adult. And then once my mom passed away in the millennium, everybody's like the millennium, the year 2000, great, great, great. And then my mom passed away, and I thought it was the worst year in the world. And so I stayed around there after my mom passed for a few years, and then I moved to Hotlanta. And it's funny you mentioned wanting to be a driver, because we have visited Atlanta a lot of different times. And when we used to come to Atlanta, I used to say to my mom that I wanted to be a Hotlanta driver.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
I absolutely used to love the traffic in Atlanta. And so as a kid, I wanted to drive in the traffic. And so here I am today fighting with the traffic in Atlanta, Georgia.
Well, so you are truly a Southern belle. You're a Southerner. And so what happens now? You are on the show with two Northerners and two New Yorkers at that. And so is it interesting to you at all? And you're now big on the Hair Radio Morning Show. You get to mix it up with these celebrated individuals from all over the country and literally all over the world. You talk to folks everywhere on the air every morning. You join me on the program. And so what can you tell us? Do you notice a difference between the South and the North and just the folks that you've been hearing on the show? Or, you know, do you pay attention to that kind of thing?
You know, not necessarily. I feel like because of my career, and I've been in the hair industry since I got out of high school. I started doing hair immediately. The crazy part about it is I practiced on my family. My family was more than willing to allow me to screw their hair up so that I could get my career on the road. They would volunteer to get their hair screwed up until
wow.
I learned the ropes. And so, you know, I tend to not meet strangers. No matter where they're from, no matter what color they are, black, brown, white, purple, pink, it doesn't matter. I'm just naturally drawn to people. And when you're in a career as a hairstylist behind the chair, you have to talk to people. And a lot of times you may not, that person may be a first-time client. You may not know them, but you have to talk to them to get them to open up to you, so that you can communicate about what they want, need, or desire. So I don't meet strangers, the only reason I won't talk to you is that you don't want to talk. So, I mean, I've walked, and it's funny because I had a friend and she used to say, how do you do that? How do you just walk up to a stranger and just start talking, just start a conversation? And I was like, well, you know, that's what I do. And it was funny because she's a hairstylist as well. But I guess everybody doesn't have the openness. And, I mean, I'll walk in a grocery store and maybe start up a conversation. I've tried to start conversations sometimes with people, and they don't say anything. And so I just think, well, maybe their hearing is not that great. Or, I mean, you don't know the person, so you don't know what their reason is for not talking back. But some people just don't want to talk, and some people may have, you know, different issues or reasons why they can't talk, you know. So I don't take it personal, but I tend to not really meet strangers. The only reason you'll be a stranger to Terry Parrish is that you want to be a stranger.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm a people person, and I don't have a problem talking with anyone at any time. So yeah, I think that's a great part of my personality that's been brought out by my career. Like I said, sometimes you have to really work on making the client comfortable so they can open up to you about what they want and how they want it. And I like to make people, you know, comfortable enough to say, hey, I don't really like this, and that's okay. So I just want people to just be comfortable. So I typically don't meet strangers. So the fact that you guys are from a different place from me actually excites me because I've never been to New York.
Wow.
Never
well,
been
to
New York, never
to
been, to New, been to New Jersey. So I'm actually excited that you guys are from a different place that I am. So I think that's a really, really great thing. And don't get me wrong, I do know people from New York, New Jersey. I have some cousins who actually, they were raised up in New York. And actually, they moved down to Florida, and they never came back to New York, and they're still down there. And so
wow. That
was always cool. Yeah, and they were a set of twins, and so that was always really cool that they were from a different, you know, place from me. But they got down to the South, and they never went back, and they're still in the South.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
well, now
so
tell us
I
a little bit
cool.
about Yeah, now tell us a little bit about your hair background. So you're a cosmetologist, or are you more so on the natural side, or are you both? Or where do you fall in on the hair spectrum, shall we say?
You know, the really funny part about it is I'm somewhat of a chameleon. I've done everything. I've done some barbering. And you do that, and when you've worked at different places, I've worked at different, like, haircutting places like haircuttery, things like that. So you learn some barbering skills as well at places like haircuttery and things like that. I've worked on all nationalities of hair, you know, black, Caucasian, and otherwise. And so I feel like I'm well-versed in just about everything. So I've done, you know, the sew-ins, the, you know, different things like that. I've done quick weaves, and for the last probably 15 years, I've specialized in just natural hair in pretty much every aspect of that. There are some new things that I'm going to jump into when I do go back to work after COVID-19. My goal is to get into the microlinking, if you've never heard of that.
Yes, of course.
Have you heard of the microlinks?
Absolutely. You're talking
yeah,
to Terry
so.
Hines.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
Absolutely.
And so there are some new aspects that I desire to, some uncharted waters. I'm interested
yeah.
in definitely getting into more barbering and also the man weaves, the units, hair enhancement
uh-huh.
units. I definitely want to do that as well. So there's always something new coming out that you can learn. And so I, even though I've been in the industry for 30 years, I haven't stopped learning. And pretty I'm pretty good at just about any and everything. So I haven't found anything in the hair industry yet that has, you know, stomped me. Like, so I'm pretty even-handed at everything. So,
well,
you know,
I
some people like, well, I don't
awesome.
Do this or I don't do that. I'm pretty well-versed in just about everything in the hair industry. So I'm looking forward to, you know, stepping into those uncharted waters of the microlinks and also the male hair units. And so I'm excited about that.
Okay, well, awesome. Well, we always have on quite a few who specialize in those very things. And I love it. I remember the old prosthesis talks that when they first came out with, it was more so male-based back then. And this was long before weaving kind of took over, you know, and for women and all of that in the way that it's presented out there now. But I'll
right.
tell you something. I think this is awesome. It's good to have you on the show, and it's good that you have a comfortability with the hair and beauty industry and where you are on the spectrum of hair care. And we always push this here, and that's about healthy hair care. We have everybody on from trichologists to hair practitioners to hairstylists and dermatologists. We have everybody. That's what this
and
program is
it.
All about. Yeah, it
yeah,
really is.
I definitely love it. I love the entire industry. That's the thing, like, and I know sometimes you may not be able to do everything, but I definitely enjoy the, I wouldn't mind getting into the cosmetic side of things. So, like, you mentioned the skin and everything. Like, I love all of that. Like, I love the makeup. I love all of those things. So I'm not, you know, I'm not limited to just hair and things like that. So I love the cosmetic side, skincare. Yeah, so I love it all. I love it all.
Well, it sounds absolutely awesome. And this is something that we are really kind of getting behind here at the Hair Radio Morning Show and really kind of pushing. And I think this has just been just phenomenal. And it's good to get to know you on this level here at the Hair Radio Morning Show. So we really are taking a moment to get to know Miss Terry. You guys know her as our fan contributor. She's with us weekdays. And I wanted to make sure, because I think earlier we mentioned that we're on Tuesday through Friday, but we're actually on Monday through Friday from 6 in the morning till 9. It's just that we allow for live call-in on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So that is the clarification on that. So that was mentioned earlier in our middle hour today. I want to say we are just on to some big things. The Hair Radio Awards, we've got to talk about that. And I think we'll do that in just a bit. I think we'll take a little bit of a break. We'll come back. We'll talk about the Hair Radio Awards. And we kind of will close out on that because it's a lot to kind of get into and to kind of, you know, introduce to everybody this morning. So we're going to have you guys to stay with us right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. I guess we should acknowledge our amazing sponsors before we go to actual commercial break. You know, folks like fixyourfeet.com with Dr. Ragland, who will be with us in the next week or so right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. She'll be live. Rugged Evolution Beard Care. Their website is ruggedevo.com. Smooth Black, you had a chance to hear him yesterday on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Mr. Troy Ballard, that is. StimulatingRoots.com. Talk about hair loss systems. The Stimulating Roots is spelled R-U-T-Z. So it's StimulatingRoots.com. Check them out when you get a moment. Also want to welcome this amazing lady. She started her own online supply business. TracyBeautySupply.com. So another one of our amazing supporters. You'll hear her commercial play right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. And Tracy will be with us herself to kind of fill in some of the information about her amazing rise in the hair industry. So we're real excited about that. So lots of stuff coming up soon. Not to mention, Ms. Terry, I've got to bring folks all of our specials. We still have Talking About Cosby. I'm supposed to do some work with some folks, some more folks out in California. Actually, two other folks out in California, different parts. And so two or three, actually. It's a lot of folks that we're going to be interacting with. Yeah. So next Wednesday, don't forget, Smooth Black is back at 8:30 in the morning on Wednesdays. Yeah. And then starting very soon, we'll have another announcement of another person who will be joining our lineup on a regular basis.
Right.
So we're doing the most here at Hair Radio, as they say, out here, right, as they say.
Oh, yeah.
So let's just, we'll take a little bit of a music break, and we will be back with a little bit more, well, I should say, of the Hair Radio Morning Show this morning. So we're going to have you guys to kind of stay with us. Here is, you know, I love myself some RuPaul. Here is Supermodel. Stay with us.
Once upon a time, there was a little black girl in the Brewster Projects of Detroit, Michigan. At 15, she was spotted by an Ebony Fashion Fair talent scout, and her modeling career took off.
You better work.
Shantae, 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 Shantae.
I have one thing to say. You better work.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now we have standing by a very special guest who's been with us many times. Well, she was an official announcer right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Mary Reed Johnson from Hairhead. Hold it, Hairhead Heart. Good morning, good morning.
Good morning,
did I get
number
it right?
550. Oh my goodness. Carrie, what do you don't do? I love it. Congratulations on number 550.
Oh, thank you, Mary. Now I just want to remind everybody, because you are so instrumental out there, your radio show, talk show host in your own right, as well as just doing so many wonderful things. You're a hairstylist. You've been in the hair business many years. You have hair, the three H's, hair, head, heart. Can you tell us real quickly?
Hair, head, heart, countdown.
Tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind, real quickly, for all of our listeners.
Sure. Hair, head, and heart, like I said, top down. The things that I am probably most connected to and passionate about, I think everything relates to all of those three, whether it's safety or health or, you know, career, all of those three things, I tie them together, and that's the name of my little business.
Well, I am so excited because just the fact that you have helped us to get to the 550 shows of the All New Hair Radio Morning Show. So I just want to shout out to you, Mary. Thank you so much.
Well, you know, this is a great place to learn, and so I appreciate you in spades.
Well, listen, back at you. All right. Thank you, Mary. All right, folks, keep it right here. We've got more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to go. Stay with us.
Time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines with Miss Terry on the line as we begin to kind of wind it down. Yes, good morning. Good morning. Rise and shine, like Purple Barbie says. Now, listen, I all want to take a moment to recognize Mary Reed Johnson, who you just kind of heard right here on the show. Mary Reed Johnson, she hosts her own radio show, Stuff Out There. I remember she did a special accounting of the George Floyd incident. She's out in Minneapolis generally, and she, which is where she's based, and she did a whole accounting as she lives right near the location of where the whole incident took place. And she told us all about the store. She told us about everything. And so if you guys get a chance, go on Spotify. You guys know Spotify. You can put in, once you get to Spotify.com, then search Carrie Hines podcast, and you'll see the article. The interview that I did with Mary about George Floyd. So this was about a year ago, and just amazing stuff. I just feel we're so fortunate. We really are, Miss Terry, to just be in the middle of everybody. You know, we just have such archives. It's like a chronology of American culture for our community right here through our broadcast.
Right.
Is that not something?
It's amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, we've done
great
some great stuff.
Great to be able
stuff,
to have
so.
That.
It's priceless. So I have to say, we just want to say you've done a great job on the show, Miss Terry. You always do. And
thank
we're so,
so
proud
much.
To have
appreciate
you.
Appreciate you having
yes.
me. Appreciate you having
absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So tomorrow, folks, it's a special guest. I have a gentleman who will be joining us. His name is, you guys know him. His name is St. Jacques. And he's usually with us on, a big fan of ours on Facebook. And I just wanted to say thank you. He's been in the business for several decades out there as well. Actually, about four decades. He might kill me for saying exactly how long, but he's been out there a long time.
long before I got into the business. But he'll be with us live on the show all the way from California. He'll be with us at 8:30 on Friday. And Fridays, our show is always just light and fun, and we try to do it every day here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. I just want to say it's been an amazing Thursday on this April 29th of 2021, our show number 555, which is 555, show number 555. It's been a wonderful, wonderful broadcast. I want to thank all of our guests today, including Harlem Will, who was with us earlier today, and just so many wonderful folks, and Miss Terry, myself, on behalf of everybody at Hair Radio Morning Show, thank you for being a part of this experience. It's about creating the experience
thank
on the
you
show.
For sharing the
right?
experience with us. Thank you.
Exactly, exactly. And so it's time for our outro, which is our daily summary and all that wonderful good stuff that we get on at about this time each day. And just don't forget to tune in starting 6 o'clock in the morning from 6 to 9 Eastern time. And I've got to tell you, we still got to talk about the Hair Radio Awards. We'll do that
tomorrow.
It'll be all dedicated to the Hair Radio Awards. Make it a wonderful day, everybody. We just did, I should say. Here's the outro.
It's that time again to bring this edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show to a close. But it doesn't have to end here. Visit our website at hairradio.com and find out more about today's program's guests. Now, I want to thank our amazing on-air team and fan contributors, and especially our great sponsors, which include FixYourFeet.com, Rugged Evolution Beard Care, Smooth Black Ink, Stimulating Roots, Prestige Book by Mr. Jarrell Glass. Now, don't forget to come meet all of us in person at our live hair and beauty show. It's a HairNationExpo.biz event called The Road to Healthy Hair. It's being held at the Showboat Hotel in Atlantic City, New Jersey on Saturday, August 21st, 2021, Sunday, August 22nd, 2021, and Monday, August 23rd, 2021. That's three big days. Now, the hours are from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tickets are on sale now at eventbrite.com. The event is for everyone. You don't have to be a hair or beauty professional to come to our show. Let us know if you'd like to be a vendor. Call us. Call our office at 862-277-0686. And again, that number is 862-277-0686. Now, if you're interested in being a guest or advertising on the Hair Radio Morning Show, give us a call. And for those of you who are just starting your career as an entrepreneur, you want to pick up your very own copy of How to Get Rich in the Hair Business. It's by me, Carrie Hines, and is on sale at Amazon.com. Start your new career as a Caribbean Hair Products Distributor, where you'll make money and meet interesting folks selling our hair care system. Caribbean Shampoo, Caribbean Conditioner for the fellas, is Caribbean Beard Oil. It's my very own hair growth system that's infused.
There we go.
Caffeine to stimulate the scalp. And don't forget to tune in to our very next live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. Our program airs each weekday from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern. That's 5 to 8 Central. And if you miss that live broadcast, we've got you covered. Go to blogtalkradio.com/hairradio. And again, Hair Radio is always spelled